This podcast is part of the Erotica Podcast Network. We offer a free Erotica podcast and a premium Patron Taboo podcast which contains more intense sexual themes. You can subscribe to the premium podcast for $2 per month or support the Erotica Podcast on Patreon to support us and allows members to request future stories and themes. Thank you for listening. This podcast contains mature content and is intended for an adult audience only. It contains explicit words, thoughts, and ideas. The content of all stories is fiction with any similarities to real people or events being purely coincidental. This podcast is not intended for anything but entertainment of the listener, and if you do not agree with the themes listed in the tags, please do not listen to the story. All characters engaging in sexual relationships or activities are 18 years old or older. This story was found on a free website and brought to audio form here. I did not write and take no credit for this story. Please visit the link in the comments to further support this author. Endangered Part 13 by LTPC. Chapter 12 Part 2. Despite Amy's forewarning, despite Haley's wide, excited eyes and the tailor-made love nest, Chris couldn't quite believe what this night had in store for him. His cock was already aching for action at the thought of it. His dragon preened within, one very happy beast. The intimate audience smiled back at him, indulgent and knowing. Michelle was right, this night was going to spoil him, possibly forever. Haley shook her way through two climaxes in short order once Chris set to work. Her fuzzy blonde muff was already primed, fat and dewy before he even got his tongue into play. By the time his fingers entered the slippery fray, the little werbison was a creamy, quivering mess of pleasured nerves. She eventually pushed his head away from between her trembling thighs, demanding to return the favor. Chris enjoyed himself immensely as she familiarized his cock to the delights of her soft lips and playful tongue. Her fingers, gods, her fingers were expert. But it was torturous in its own way, knowing there was a lot of hot, willing vagina waiting for him right on the other side of the heavy drapes. Haley surprised him though when she lay him on his side and proceeded to delicately stroke him off against the softness of her sexy tummy. She looked up at him so lovingly, sighing contentedly as she guided his big hand to her sprawled tits. They were almost face to face on their sides, kissing and nuzzling, humping their bodies together with an almost innocent fervor. Looking straight at him, his throbbing knob prodding her soft skin and treating her to delicate, insistent touches, Haley whispered that she wanted his cum. She told him in no uncertain terms that she wanted to taste him, to rub him all over her so that she stank of him. She said she wanted to feel his magic racing through her, and that she was going to stop taking her doses of pheromone cancellation portion soon. Chris' eruption was already rising along blissful, unstoppable paths of tension and imagination when the buxom little woman executed her coup de grace. I think I'm almost ready to try out this big thing, you know. Haley purred as he thickened, thrusting jerkily against her precum slimy fingers. My latest toy arrived in the mail today and it's crazy thick. You should see it. I can't believe I'm abusing my little hole for you like that, but it's gotta be worth it to handle this beast. Haley, NGNNN. Chris grunted back, eyes squeezing shut as her words and touch spurred his twitching cock to the very brink of release. This little muffin is going to be all yours. Imagine that, all juicy and creamy and squishy when you work this beautiful thing into me. I can barely wait. That did it for Chris, who thrust himself almost violently against her and began spewing thick, pearly lines of spunk all across her abdomen. Haley giggled delightedly at his orgasm-racked grimace and the seemingly endless fountain of semen rapidly making a mess of her tummy, hands, and the disheveled sheets. He reflexively pawed her tits as he grunted and groaned in release, but she embraced that as the compliment it was no doubt intended as. They were both spattered and splotched when Chris finally opened his eyes to gaze down at his naughty little brainiac in wonder. Wow, I bet that's something else when you do it way deep in me. Chris groaned, covering his face with a hand as his penis twitched to her teasing words. He pulled her hands away from his balls lest he lose control of himself. Her wrists were easy to capture above her head, allowing Chris to kiss the tease right out of her. They only enjoyed a few more moments of sticky cuddling before Emmy barged to announce that he was required for his next engagement. Haley was true to her word. As Chris wrapped a nearby towel around his waist and prepared to leave, he was treated to the head-swelling image of the little blonde minx laying sprawled on dark, spoiled sheets, sampling his seed off of the sensuous lines of her abdomen. That was too much for Emmy to bear, and the sprite pretty much launched herself at Haley, flapping ragged to tackle her on the bed. He might have stayed to find out just how sharing Haley had become with Imianth, but his name was called from outside in a lilting tone that conjured all sorts of wonderful possibilities to mind. The night had only just begun. His effort at modesty made Claire twitter in delight. She snatched at his towel, and it soon lay in a heap on the tiles. The bossy young dragoness took his hand, parading him past the others, down the broad steps and into the warm water. Chris' attention was entirely captivated by the curves of her back and the lovely way her hips and rear end widened. This was his mate, and the visual cues to her fertility weren't diminished at all by the fact that her womb already swelled with his twin daughters. The lime green bottoms of her bikini were very tight, digging into her sumptuous flesh in ways that made his hands twitch jealously. Claire chose a spot in one of the corners nearest the door, pushing Chris down into a submerged wooden bench so that he was facing the rear wall and his attention would be all for her. She knew that with his size and incredible strength he could easily resist her bossing and manhandling. Indeed, it was rather exciting when he did. However, it made her heart thrum most when he was putty in her hands, so big, lovable, and gentle. An oversized puppy, mounting the bench on top of him, splashed the warm water all about them, even up into her loose auburn hair. With her feet firmly placed on either side of his trunk-like thighs, Claire lowered herself, breath escaping in a rush as the waterline hit her sensitive bits. Squatting frog-like in his lap, she took his adorably worshipful face in her hands, leaning down to delicately kiss his slightly swollen lips. Chris watched her nose scrunch as she inadvertently got an intimate taste of Haley. His pregnant mate cocked her head in a rather reptilian manner, a dangerous little smirk forming at the corners of her mouth. One of her hands twisted in his short hair while the other dove into the water, capturing his half-hard penis by the root.
"No funny ideas!"
Claire hussed, pushing herself close. His manhood butted up against her bikini-covered mound, rising jauntily up out of the agitated water. She trapped it between her swelling stomach and his firm torso, just as she knew would drive him crazy.
"Do you like my new bikini? We all got them especially for the occasion."
Chris dropped her captivating green gaze to look down between them at the marvelously scant green garment. His hand stroked appreciatively up the outside of her smooth thighs over her butt, and up to settle at the slimming of her waist. In their position, her modest breasts bulged forward, pert and hanging perfectly above the upper curve of her pregnancy. He hardened fully once more, as she slowly rocked herself against the sensitive underside of his penis.
"I'll take that as a yes,"
the dragoness chuckled, flicking wetted strands of red hair behind her ear as she leaned back in to kiss.
"They're starting to get bigger, you know, my titties."
"Claire," he groaned.
"What?"
"They are." She feigned innocence as her hands fumbled underwater to pull aside the flimsy fabric forestalling their sex.
"Now just relax and enjoy the ride."
Ride him she did, their bodies splashing in lustful, passionate rhythm. The water was no hindrance. As a dragoness, Claire had her own sexual quirks to match the males of their species. He would never soften inside her if she willed it, not that he needed the help right now. Though her womb was obviously off-limits at the moment, she could still produce a copious flow of lubrication to help ease the way for a randy mate. Their coupling was as juicy and slippery as ever despite the water trying its hardest to wash away their junk gunk. Claire's thighs and legs burned, and working for her pleasure made different somehow, all in her control. She sweated with the effort of raising and lowering, taking his rampant maleness in such a physically taxing position. It wouldn't be long before her condition prevented her from enjoying such poses. The heat and work was exciting though, and when she began to falter in the build-up to her release, he was ready. Chris took over, helping to lift her up and down, thrusting just a bit from below so that he bottomed out, filling her completely.
"Fuck you and your big dick!"
Claire hissed when he did that, looking down at him with such hungry, accusatory eyes that he couldn't help doing it again, knowing she was built for that and more besides. Claire's body was on fire, overheating with the sex, with so much exertion, and with steam and splashing hot water. It was perfect, almost as if she was riding him in a bed of embers and lapping flame. She tugged at his hair as her climax finally crested, burying his face in her chest with arms wrapped crushingly around his head. She clung to him as bliss release washed through her, lungs robbed of air by the hard, hot lump of steel filling her aching center then. Claire clawed helplessly at his shoulders when he didn't stop, finding herself rising inexorably toward a second orgasm as he thrust mercilessly from below. Her mate plundered her needy little hole without apology because he had earned the right. That throbbing spear of male flesh didn't yield one bit, delivering hot, undeniable friction to every inch of her straining, bucking pussy. Susan and Petra burst out laughing when Claire shuddered and squealed through a second, more intense storm of pleasure. One of Chris's big thumbs was firmly pressing her love button beneath their lapping fuckwaves. Claire peeked her eyes open and playfully flipped her two brewmates the bird over the tops of the potted plants, right before the heat of Chris' cum began flooding into her already stuffed insides. She summoned a final burst of energy to madly grind her hips against his spewing cock. It was his turn to squirm and groan as she humped him ragged. Her lips found his as magical potential thrummed around their tight coupling. Claire thrust her tongue into his mouth, claiming him, squeezing him tight with her entire body until there was nothing left and his spend floated white and denatured around them. She started down at her mate, panting and flushed with exertion. He looked insufferably pleased with himself, blue eyes meeting her boldly and the beginnings of a knowing smile on his lips. It might be illogical, but it galled that he seemed to know just how to service her, always wringing more pleasure from her body than she bargained on. Dragon instinct welled up within her, and before she could think about it further, her palm swung forward, connecting hard with his cheek. The slap resounded off the walls as the young dragoness darted back in, capitalizing on his astonishment to roughly kiss his infuriating lips. His eyes were satisfyingly wide as her hand plunged into the water, yanking him out of her by the root even as she bit his lower lip and dragged it backward.
"You fucking beast!"
She growled low over the churning bathwater, grinding the fat, sensitive helm of his cock relentlessly against her gaping, cummy labia. It was the wrong angle for penetration, but she crushed her meaty vulva down on top of his apple-like knob until he cried out. Forehead to forehead, eye to eye, Claire was on the verge of releasing control. Who knew what would happen then? But surely the rest of the brood would be disappointed if she dragged him into the grotto and didn't let him out for a few days. She would be monumentally sore afterward, but rutting him into submission in her half-form might just be worth it.
"Claire, I dash shut it."
She purred dangerously, slowly regaining control of her wild desires. She released his absurdly hard penis to bob up between them, butting her forehead gently against his own.
"If I catch you going easy on anyone tonight, you're going to get it."
Bewildered, unsure exactly what he'd been threatened with, but unwilling to suffer the consequences of challenging his pregnant mate's logic, Chris just nodded his assent. She smiled challengingly down at him, caressing his reddened cheek affectionately before she splashed out of his lap. It was Claire's turn to smirk as she hiked the snug green bottoms back into place over her sensitive, fuck-swollen mound. Feeling much better,
delightfully brimming with magic and aftertremors, Claire sauntered up the steps out of the big tub. Soaking wet and feeling unstoppably beautiful, she completely ignored her mother's cocked eyebrow and went in search of Annabelle and the promise of food. Susan came down the steps to into the pool a few minutes later. After a little cuddling and washing, she took him back to the curtained alcove. They embraced, kissing hungrily as the witch shimmied out of her clingy swimsuit. The loving passion between them had redoubled since their reunion on the moonlit beach. Knees perched right at the edge of the bed so that her shapely bottom hung out in midair, Susan offered her bushy, creamy slot up for plunder. Chris rose to the challenge, slipping his broad cock deep in one smooth, gentle lunge, pre-cum already spouting from his tip. Susan gasped, clawing at the sheets as her lover mounted her like a stallion, draping himself across her back. Kissing and nibbling her neck, Chris began a deep, lazy humping that quickly had Susan's fuzzy lips frothing with buttery juices. The sight of their strained coupling drove him wild, her pink labia stretched thin to accommodate him, her pubic hair matted down and clinging to his cum-streaked, sawing cock every time he withdrew. Her womanhood bulged out between silky pale thighs when he thrust in. Outside, they heard the commotion as food began to arrive. Neither of the mating couple paused or slowed in the least. In fact, the young man began pumping his hips faster. Susan never took long to get off, especially not when Chris began churning away at her like a man possessed. She giggled at his eagerness to finish with her and satisfy his bottomless appetite for Annabelle's cooking. She found it endearing in a strange sort of way. Relaxing, arching her bottom just a bit higher to receive his vigorous thrusts, Susan focused solely on enjoying all the wonderful sensations his penis ignited as it plunged back and forth inside her. It was sort of tricky to summon the concentration to squeeze down on him when he was pumping her so hard that his testicles swung forward into her upturned clitoris, but she managed and was rewarded. He came first, a torrent of warmth splashing against her dilated cervix with an accompanying grunt of primal masculine satisfaction. Susan shuddered as his magic surged, shoving her the last few steps into just the type of deep, body-twisting pleasure she needed from him. Her clitoris throbbed, and she cried out his name in supplication. He pinned her bucking hips with unnatural strength, holding her fast. Susan knew what came next, moaning unintelligibly as he somehow mated the tip of his swollen penis to the narrow mouth of her womb and began pulsing mighty gushes of seed directly where it belonged. The sothozoa quivered at the center of her being, sharing in every maddening surge of twin magic and sinful heat launched into her core. It and Susan were more and more attuned these days. It was easier to convince the strange organism to keep its errant roots bottled up now that she had Chris Cock on the regular once more. His doses of magic did wonders to calm its eternal quest for energy, tempering the ancient plant into a less urgent state of quiescence and cooperation. She still managed to accidentally poke holes in the sheets with a few dark protrusions along her forearms. She was just trying to hold on. The sothozoa was just trying to help. The mattress suffered the consequences. In the height of their lust, oversensitized and out of breath, Susan threw her head back against his naked, sweaty chest and let out a keening moan. The entire household knew her satisfaction as Chris almost collapsed on top of her, thick seed beginning to leak from their swollen coupling. There was no sugarcoating it. Chris was beat after Susan. Despite being conditioned to sex 3 or 4 times on a quiet day, he could tell there wasn't much left to give. His penis throbbed, red and almost painful to touch. Emmy had taken her toll that afternoon. Thank goodness Susan had taken it easy on him with her plant-like appendages and her internal weirdness. The thought of more sex at that moment almost made him whimper, much as that shamed his dragon. The temporarily hung curtains of the little carnal alcove swished, and Imian's gradually deepening voice twittered in delighted tones. That's so cute, master, are you all tired out? Chris groaned. The insatiable miniature woman was about the last broodmate he needed pestering him to perform. Thank you, sweetie, that was lovely. Susan kissed his damp hair as she extracted herself from the tangled sprawl of their overheated limbs. She stepped into the discarded swimsuit on the floor, and Chris couldn't help admiring the way she wriggled back into the clingy garment. He's all yours, Emmy. Emmy pounced on his back as Susan left, giggling madly at his wordless noises of despair. Her lips plied nibbling kisses up his spine, her breath warm on the back of his neck. She was naked, dark navy nipples scraping teasingly across his clammy skin. Master, you're not even halfway. We can't have you dropping off just yet. Chris complied with her attempt to turn him, rolling into his back to face his stacked little tormentor. Resistance was futile, and he was in no state to suffer a zapping. Your entree is served. Emmy grinned imperiously down at him above a beautifully peaked blue cleavage that already put her mistress to shame. She settled her wings daintily against her shoulders, one finger held posed in the air. No food until you've finished your aphrodisiac. His eyes followed her other hand as it trailed down across her sculpture-worthy tummy. Chris was unsurprised to discover the sprite holding her dewy cleft open, showing him she was as pink as could be on the inside. From there, Chris' memories of the night blurred a little. Emmy's sweet little lovebox produced a heady, creamy flow of novel, likely magical simulants. There was undoubtedly some sort of intoxicant or mild narcotic in her fragrant fluids too, because Chris' penis bounced back with the unrelenting fervor of one of those inflatable arm-wavy monstrosities. He pounced on Annabelle as she came from the kitchen with a platter of thinly sliced meats, dipping sauces, and fresh, piping hot flatbread. She squealed in surprise, then mock outrage as he burst naked and rampant. From the love tent, she discarded the fluffy robe, revealing her own choice of crimson, lacy boy shorts with a matching camisole for the evening's entertainment. Chris snatched up the tray of delicacies with one arm and put the kicking, giggling bundle of scantily clad fiancée under the other. Prizes secured, he tramped victoriously back toward the small pool, only to find the rest of his brewmates enjoying the warm water already. They were half submerged around the edges, talking and snacking happily from a high-sided floating platform that was loaded to the gunwales with all sorts of tasty morsels and finger food. "Quick, eat up, ladies." Petra laughed at his wide-eyed stare, popping a juicy green grape and a piece of cheese between her lips as Annabelle regained her feet and led their lucky lover down to join the others. "Hey, where's Lillian?" Chris asked, finally noting the vampirous absence amidst the overwhelming display of wet skin and tantalizing undergarments. "She's like a boss monster in one of those video games we used to play." Annabelle laughed as she settled sideways onto his lap in the water. "If we unleash her too early, she'll ruin all our fun. Besides, she said she'd have a hard time controlling herself with all the attention you're getting." Annabelle snagged the platter from his hands as he pondered her answer. She expertly prepared a chewy, juicy morsel of roasted lamb, dunking it in spicy plum sauce before wrapping it in a strip of buttery, flaky roti. His lips were open expectantly, almost drooling when she reversed course and popped the savory treat into her own mouth instead of feeding it to him. Chris growled, and the tray was almost lost to the depths in the ensuing tussle. When the splashing and playful noises died down, Chris had recovered some of the flavor from her lips, but Annabelle emerged with the upper hand. The flimsy gusset of her little shorts was designed to rip, and his fat, almost hard helmet now nestled just inside her opening. She was magnanimous in her victory, feeding him from the floating island as it voyaged around the big tub on gentle pushes. He hardened within her as they sat spooned together, but they didn't move, instead joining in conversation with the others as they ate. Michelle and Petra were leading a discussion on how the Synod and the existing territory structure were going to integrate with human nations and states. "I just don't see it." Petra shook her head, sending dangling golden earrings swinging into her damp hair. Wet, it took on a darker tone of gray which brought to Chris' mind an almost forgotten encounter with a mysterious Lady Gargoyle. "There are so few beings, most humans outside a territory hub will never even see one of us in their entire lives, let alone interact." Chris sighed contentedly, warm and supported by the water with Annabelle's but nestled snugly in his lap. His penis twitched as she leaned forward to reach a plate of cheeses, and the cheeky look she shot at him over her slender shoulder made his chest swell with love and affection. "It's already happening, I think you'll be surprised." Michelle countered as she loaded fig paste, blue cheese, and a slice of pear onto a buttery cracker. "There's going to be a huge demand for magic in the private sector. It will mostly be a novelty at first. But once beings don't need to worry about staying hidden, magic will eventually become commonplace. It might take a generation, maybe two, but there are also going to be a lot more beings by then. Well, I'm doing my part," Claire joked, patting her tummy affectionately. "I think Michelle is right though, Mom." Chris was almost kidnapped just so Dr. Mayer could get her bony old hands on him. "I have to admit too, from what she shared with me these last few weeks, there's potential to completely upend some aspects of both societies. I mean, our blood could literally cure metastasized cancers." "That's amazing, Claire. It's too bad integration will have to be a gradual process though," Haley added. "The last thing anyone wants out of this is massive upheaval. Human leaders will have to limit the way magic is introduced to the general population in order to prevent fear-mongering and resentment from getting out of hand. I mean, they turned Chris and I down on nearly free, unlimited clean energy. I mean, I get why they did it, but it's still disappointing." "Haley's right." Michelle nodded her approval. "Short term, all aspects of magic will still have to be strictly regulated. A lot of work will need to be put in to spin this all in a positive light, which is the most important reason why I need Chris involved in the effort. Long term though, and all you magical types should be thinking long term, I predict our societies and way of life will be fundamentally different with magic in the open. You can't put the genie back in the bottle once you've discovered a new technology. Magic is going to be a new currency, a new expression of power. That's what all this back and forth between our leaders ultimately boils down to. They're trying to divide a fresh baked pie, and squabbling over who gets what pieces before the damn thing is even out of the oven. Only, the Synod and territory leaders already have dibs on it," Susan pointed out. "They aren't about to give away their positions and influence for nothing, at least I really hope they won't. For better or worse, our little magical islands completely rely on them. In some ways we beings are going to be even more vulnerable to cultural and economic disturbance when the time comes." "Oh, they certainly won't." Michelle nodded her agreement. "They're digging their claws in on issues where it matters. Judicial powers, freedoms of movement, association, self-defense. There are some huge long-term benefits too, and I have to give Rayla credit for spotting them before I did. That is one damn smart, conniving elf."
"Like what?"
Claire asked, intently interested. "Well, for one, asset accumulation. So far beings have been limited by needing to keep their wealth relatively hidden from mundane scrutiny. That's actually become a lot easier recently, at least for the technologically savvy. If beings are allowed to be open about it, what's to stop a dragon or elf with a potentially undetermined lifespan from slowly buying up property, or taking over human businesses and supply? On a 1,000-year scale, that is entirely plausible. And I would imagine it's hard for human leaders to deny beings equal rights of ownership without exposing their own top-heavy hypocrisy." Petra saw what Michelle was getting at. In the long run, beings could gain a position of leverage in human society, slowly sifting themselves to the top. Whether or not they should was another question. It would be a dangerous tightrope to walk, and she was glad not to be infected with ambition. A happy, fulfilling life with her mate and brood was enough for her, and maybe just a modest chamber of plundered dwarven treasure. Annabelle began rocking her hips ever so slowly back and forth as she and Chris listened to the brood continue to debate. The merits and pitfalls of the revelation were quite fascinating, but she had something else occupying her mind, and her needy insides. She squeezed rhythmically against his deep buried erection, which was both delightful and maddening. Chris' patient indulgence seemed nearly limitless though, and he didn't give in and ravish her, as she'd half hoped. Together they helped feed each other from the vast array of delicacies Annabelle had spent all afternoon preparing. He heaped effusive praise on her culinary skills with every new juicy morsel or unlikely combination of flavors she came up with for him to try. Eventually, despite their audience, Annabelle put some real effort in and began shoving her marvelous rear end back into his lap with powerful short strokes. Chris could never last with the upper quarter of his cock snugged firmly inside her baking little womb. She was in complete control, and just like a dragoness, her cervix trapped him, squeezing so firmly that his knob felt like it was swelling bigger and bigger with every pulse of excited blood. It was a wonder that his seed wasn't choked off below the head. Of course it overcame her resistance, bursting free from his tip in great, shuddering gouts that had them both gasping for air. They held each other with death-like grips, rocking thorough extended waves of release and primal pleasure, their surroundings irrelevant for a few blissful minutes. Michelle was next, leading him away from the crowded bathroom to the seclusion of the huge utility closet down at the end of the left hallway. It was dark and warm. The big aircon unit was humming away loudly as she backed herself against the section of sturdy plastered wall. With an incredibly sexy smile, she glanced suggestively up towards the ceiling. Chris followed her eyes upward, a lecherous chuckle rising in his throat as he registered the two D-shackles attached to newly installed rock bolts. A short length of thick, soft rope hung from each, though they were currently tied up out of the way in a neat bow. He glanced back at Michelle in time to see her white bikini bottom side past sleek, powerful thighs, crumpling around her ankles. "Hurry up and untie it." Michelle laughed at his expression of confused delight. Her hand strummed over her sensitive labia, spreading the slick heat already leaking in anticipation of being hammered into the wall by his powerful body. She startled him when the ropes fell free, taking an experienced grip on each that involved several loops around her lean forearms. In a flash of athleticism, Michelle swung up and wrapped her legs around his waist like an Amazonian constrictor. Chris' breath left him in a rush as she used the supporting lengths or rope to lean her entire body up and against him. Their lips met, firm and giving. Her tongue darted in, then she pulled playfully away, jerking back with all her considerable strength, crashing them into the wall with a bone-jarring slap of skin on stone. The message was clear, and Chris growled in satisfaction as he took hold of her thighs and plunged roughly into her clinging heat. Michelle keened against his collarbone, and for a moment they were still, gazes and bodies locked together. They began thrashing together like a pair of spawning eels. Petra nursed him back to life in the little bathroom tent as the others chatted in the tub over dessert. First she massaged his lower back, then flipped him over and peppered him with kisses while gently sliding her juicy mound over every inch of his wilted penis. In typical Petra fashion, she whispered all sorts of lewd devotions against his skin as they pressed together. She could be absolutely obscene when she wanted to be, and there was something about him screwing every brood member in one evening that was really turning her dragon instincts into overdrive. The minty scent of her mating pheromones made the moist air thick and heady. Her words, touch, and buttery vagina inevitably resuscitated his flagging penis. "Are you sure you're not a necromancer?" Chris half-joked, glancing askance down between them at the throbbing erection she'd summoned. "Maybe I am." His beautiful mate laughed throaty as she got up on the balls of her feet to align his tip with her dewy, coral pink slit. "But we dragonesses keep our secrets close." "Mmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhmhm course. You won. Serve that little bastard an eviction notice. Mama needs her spare room back. Whoa, you're in a special mood today, huh? Chris sat up so they were eye to eye as she frantically impaled herself on his dick. Looking down, her sex spread wide around him, glistening with rich, tacky moisture. You've been driving me crazy all evening. She hissed back, fingers clawing at his shoulders and up into his damp hair. Petra absolutely crushed her breasts into his solid chest, reveling in the raw power of his body, the power of his cock moving within her. When they were apart, her loins yearned for him. When they were together, their physical compatibility was electric and undeniable. They were just two serpents writhing in the grass. The thought of loving him like this for the next few thousand years released a shudder deep within her hungry insides. It raced up her spine, setting her neck hair up, and out to her tiptoes as they began curing against an onslaught of overwhelming pleasure and love. They were mated dragons, beautifully drunk on each other. Chris managed to pick himself up, find his discarded boxers, and stagger back to the relative safety of the hot pool, accompanied by a very smug dragoness that he just floated for a while as his brood chatted and snacked. Annabelle, Immy, and Claire began dancing at one point, connecting over shared love of a catchy song they'd discovered recently. Chris indulged the wanderings of his drain-addled mind, the wonderful contradiction infecting his limbs, so heavy, yet buoyant in the supporting warmth. Eventually he went in for a second attack run on the ample leftovers put aside underneath the potted plants at the raised edge of the tub. This was taken as a signal that he was open for business once more. Haley led his brood, requesting cuddles and back scratches. The gentle minutes that followed, skin against skin, just holding and touching, were more profound in some ways than an entire evening of sex. Her milk gave him back some zest too. The others took turns as well, but it was getting late. Susan and Michelle said goodnight and went to bed. Haley bought in something to read, happy to linger at the edge of the conversation, her petite little form stretched out on one of the deck chairs. Annabelle and Immy were leaning from tipsy, toward wasted, and Claire was goading them from the sober sidelines. Petra claimed his lap like a throne, straight-backed and regal. He'd almost fallen asleep under the charm of her gentle head scratches when Immy's excited chanting made him jolt upright. Unleash the beast! Unleash the beast. Emmy, don't, that's not nice, Dash. Annabelle cut off as she stuck her head out into the living room. She was grinning crazily, pupils huge, as she rushed back and scooped the mischievous sprite into her arms. Unleash the beast. Unleash the beast. They chorused together. The bottom of his gut fell away into empty space as Chris registered the distinctive, slow clack of heels on hardwood. Petra chuckled deep, kissing his chin before walking up and out of the tub. He was all alone, left staring in both wonder and dread toward the vampire's approach. She came naked, every aspect of her exaggerated femininity on display. Her face was perfectly made up, hair long and loose, a rich brown mane tumbling over broad shoulders and outthrust breasts. Every inch of pale, perfectly creamy skin, pebbled nipples, and swaying hip was bare for all to see. Every inch, that is, except for the meager fraction concealed by her clingy fishnet body stocking. Lillian, that's no fair, we're supposed to wear bathing suits. Claire laughed as the vampiress sauntered past, black eyes locked on her target. The little lines of criss-crossing black string cut in against all her softest, bulgiest parts. The effect on such a curvy woman as Lillian was breathtaking, and Claire marveled at her confidence to wear the garment. Dear, at this stage it hardly matters. Petra noted as she began shooing the youngsters out the door. She looked back before she left. Lillian's huge bottom was cocking side to side, absurdly propped up on 5-inch black stilettos. She glided over the steps leading down into the water as if they were no hindrance at all. Her young mate was transfixed, staring worshipfully up at the avatar of Venus. Jesus, Lillian, go easy. The lights dimmed, the door shut, and Chris was alone with the flinty-eyed vampirus. She was a vision of curves, of sex, of coiled power, and deep hunger. She swished through the thigh-deep water, fingers trailing across the surface until she towered right above him. The smile on her scarlet lips wide and ravenous. Chris almost whimpered, his fingers twitched to grip her string-laced hips. But another part of him wanted to sink underneath the water in a vain attempt to hide from the black-eyed creature. Served him right for encouraging her to explore her vampiric side. I'm that scary, huh? Chris looked up to see her smile at a coy half-mast, brown eyes twinkling with friendly mirth. His friend was back, the fiend was gone. Her beautiful eyes laughed at him. You forget, I know what it's like to perform again and again like that. Even if you're genuinely enjoying yourself, it all takes a toll. She ruffled a blessedly talon-free hand through his hair, the other coming sensuously to her hip. This was all for their benefit, young one. You did so well. Tonight I'm as gentle and sweet as a kitten, I promise. Why, what were you imagining that had that pretty face going pale? Ha! Huh. Thanks, seriously. Chris relaxed, his pent lungs dumping breath in relief. A daring hand came forward of its own volition, brushing his knuckles across her in rapturous flank. The touch was soft, yet it sparked an undeniable current of affection between them. They came together slowly, Lillian settling sideways in his lap. Actually, I was thinking about a few weeks ago, when I, you know, your butt. I think that would actually kill me right now. Lillian laughed, eventually covering her beautiful wide lips with a netting-gloved hand. Oh, you are just adorable. She felt her heart lurch with love and desire, at his shyness in the face of that wonderful shared memory. Though currently bottled away inside, there was less straining at the chains from her darker nature, more purring and haunch waggling. You went to town on my little back door, Chris, and you loved every moment of it. You squashed that chocolate spider good, and it was just what I needed. Make it stop. Chris groaned, illogically embarrassed. I wouldn't do that to you tonight, lover. We won't even have sex, if you like. His penis twitched beneath her big rump and they both burst into giggles. Let's not be too hasty. He grinned. Just like that? A little reverse psychology? Lillian could take him like no other. There was an intoxicating physicality to her, like she always wanted more than he had to give. They started slow, Lillian on her back, cradling him lovingly between her thighs as she sighed through several gentle, gushy climaxes. His balls churned lazily against her ass, working overtime to come up with something, anything to plant deep in this gorgeous woman. He was almost numb, almost painful, but she was so wet, so hot and responsive, so perfect for his huge body to cover. True to her word, Lillian was gentle as a kitten, loving and tender as he slowly churned the depths of her. It was amazing, but now he needed more. She would love more too. Chris shuffled her legs up into his shoulders, pressing himself deep. That's it, oh Chris, yes that's it, She grunted so sexily as his broad, throbbing crown barely feathered her cervix. Her thighs and bottom squashed against him when he sought for purchase, and she cooed breathily beneath him, irresistibly flushed with sex as they pressed together. He could feel her warm juices bathing every inch of him, walls squeezing, caressing. He got his feet underneath himself and started lunging down into her from tip to root. She laughed delightedly as he pushed her legs higher, pounding away, his enormous testicles slapping wetly against her butthole. More, young one. More. She grinned, powerful hands stroking his burning thighs, teasing his balls. Her beautifully huge breasts jostling madly between their sweat-drenched bodies. His knob was bumping bottom now, and she still wanted more. Da. Buried to the absolute hilt, Chris erupted with a guttural roar. He held nothing back, not from her, not ever. He would give her every drop of strength he had left. Lillian felt his huge cock swell in a mighty lurch, heaving out a few hot stands before trailing off into runny leaking. His eyes squeezed closed and he moaned low and deep as his body hunched again and again in painful, pleasurable, empty spasms. Lillian put her legs around his waist as he collapsed, all that delightful strength bleeding away from limbs so powerful just moments ago. She held him close against her neck, feeling guilty as his breathing hitched with exhaustion, almost sobbing. That was perfect, my love, my little psychic. She whispered in his ear, husky and thick with her native accent. My heart beats for you, and my tummy grows every day with my love. Chris summoned the last of his mortal strength to kiss her. Not so gentle at the end there. She teased as he fell asleep. Lillian rolled them to the side of the bed, shifting his dimorphic bulk with the ease of an experienced grappler. She telekinetically grabbed two pillows to prop under his head, refusing to dislodge his wilting penis before absolutely necessary. For several minutes, she just laid there watching him breathe, studying his sleeping face and adoring the boyish contentment she saw there. Too many beings were divorced from true connection, she decided, from love. An urge to masturbate bubbled up into her consciousness, a yowl from below. The vampirist thought they should pleasure themselves with the seed leaking between her reddened lips, and the thing still filling the needy gap between her hips. Perhaps it is right, but he was done, and deserves his rest. Lillian chuckled to herself as he slipped free of her messy quim, marveling that the big little boy bunny actually covered all his mates tonight. She would tease him endlessly tomorrow about the grotesque face he made at her in the height of his efforts. The vampire fell asleep like that, one hand over her barely domed tummy, the other holding him close against her. That night may have been destined to go down in infamy, or perhaps it served the dragon's brood right for thinking up such a diabolical, irresistible reward for their mate. Exhausted, and in less than complete control of his faculties, Chris dragged the entire household into the ether as they slept out. In hindsight, the new house's spellwork may have acted as an impromptu network, or magical framing, allowing Chris to unconsciously carry them down into his realm between dimensions. It certainly saved lives once they were there, bleeding off energy and sacrifice for the several hours of terrifying, lucid dreams they all experienced. The maelstrom of wild, discordant magic spewing out of the dragon's new den was so blatant, so jarring to magical senses that it was felt outside of the ether. Members of Rayla's security team arrived on the scene within 3 minutes. They tried in vain to raise a response, then began attempting forced magical entry when no reply was forthcoming. Rebuffed, they woke Lady Narlaki's. Annabelle bolted upright with a gasp of tortured relief. She was in her room, in her bed. It took a moment to shake free of a vivid replay, to catch her breath and realize that she was at last awake. But she was freed, as a pinch of her thigh seemed to confirm. Shaken, still reliving flashes of endless headlong running, Annabelle turned to Immy's wakeful noises, compassion and love flooding her thoughts. For a breath she relived the endless flight, her and Immy. In the dream, they'd fled never quite seen, tireless pursuers through a nighttime scrubland. Otherworldly cries rang out in the night, calling each other, taunting, and ever closer. They were being herded. The things were slowly corralling them, like joyously baying hounds deep in the bloodlust of their hunt. Annabelle knew Immy had been there with her, that the sprite had shared the terrible dream at her side. She just knew it. Somehow, they'd been sharing that terrifying, lifelike experience. Annabelle knew that before she fully woke, before it even registered that they were in the ether, or that Chris had not returned in the night. She was just so relieved to be free of that terrible, horrid dream. Immy sniffled beside her, sitting up, vivid blue against the dull ether outlines of their room. They looked each other up and down in the dim, gray and blue toned ambience, and thought the same thing. Quick, Immy, go check on the others. I'll find Chris and beat him awake with something. I'm going to murder him if this is some sort of joke. Anna, I don't think it is. Immy shook her head like a wet dog, trying to rid herself of sleep fog. The taste of the ether around her was thick with power, absolutely saturated. It was coming from her beloved dragon, but for the first time, it felt icky. There was no temptation at all to nibble at a corner of it. More than that, Imianth could feel something malign nearby. A slowly throbbing pressure nagged in the back of her skull. Something ghosted her magical senses, a vast shadow circling them slowly, something from deeper waters. They were in danger. Something's wrong, something's happening to him. Go get the others, Immy! Quickly! They scampered off the bed with a grave sense of purpose. Immy launched herself off the end of the coverlet, flapping jauntily. More drunken turkey than dainty princess, the sprite only made it halfway to the door before she touched down. Annabelle might have laughed, but she was too frightened, too busy trying to focus. She had to steel herself and Bartholomew for the unknown, for magic and danger. Clarity of thought, purpose of will, mental flexibility, these were the foundations of a successful magical encounter. Annabelle barely registered the brightness shooting from the open bathroom as she raced to find Chris. She just came around the corner, and there was this purple beam blocking her path, so shockingly bright it imitated substance. She was blinded instantly, her eyes overloading as the heat of it licked against bare skin. In a short nightie with not much covered above or below the torso, the sensation was unpleasant in moments. Well, fuck! Annabelle hissed to herself, covering her eyes with her hands. Her tapestry of focus frayed, then completely disintegrated. The power she and Bartholomew had been gathering flowed out of her grasp like oil. She turned away to rub at furious afterimages pounding across her vision. Who's there? An unsteady Slavic accent called from ahead, from somewhere on the far side of the doorway. Annabelle? Lillian? Annabelle almost didn't recognize the vampire. Was her voice actually shaking? He burned me, Annabelle, be careful. It's bad, but I'll make it. Oh no, Lillian! Stay still, we'll get help. Annabelle didn't dare open her eyes again to look for the vampire. She could see white through her eyelids, bright as a childhood glance at her father's welding torch. What's going on, Dash? Out of the way! Move! Petra barreled up behind Annabelle, barging past in a headlong lunge, straight down the yawning gullet of coruscating light. Annabelle sensed a brief dimming as the fearless dragoness leapt through the doorway in blended hybrid form. She didn't know what to do, paralyzed by indecision as Bartholomew gnashed the tips of her fingers. He was frightened, desperate for any constructive outlet. Cries of shock and dismay announced the prompt arrival of the rest of the brood, and Annabelle turned to ward them back into the safety of the little diamond room, and the vast magical reservoir. Just the indirect heat was as if the bathroom doorway now led to the heart of an arc furnace. With that power, Immy could surely create some sort of powerful barrier. Annabelle would try it herself if push came to shove. They had to reach Chris, to turn him off somehow before he magically microwaved them, or something equally horrific. She didn't want to even consider going up against one of his spooky orbs gone rogue, or if that was what they were up against.
Stay back. Close your eyes. Is everyone here, Immy?
Everyone woke up at the same time, mistress.
They were already coming.
The sprite called back. With a tortured snarl, Petra flung herself back out of the doorway, burned despite her scales, routed by light and blind several times over.
Mom!
Claire shouted, rushing headlong into her own transformation as her mother collapsed to the gray, monochrome floorboards.
Shit, shit! What do we do?
Annabelle almost prayed, her fists bawling impotently. She heard a thud, a grunt, a scuffle and a drawn-out clatter. Eyes peeking through bleary, watery slits, she saw a huge, red serpentine head. Petra was dragged back to safety, clutched between gentle jaws. Michelle and Haley were around the corner, yelling at Claire not to squish them, beating ineffectually at her haunches and thrashing tail. Great, now they had a giant Claire to deal with too. At least she was small as dragons went, though more likely than most to incinerate the furniture. Right now Chris was firmly at the top of the list for worst dragon in the house. Susan vaulted forward around the tangle of brewmates, growing gnarled limbs to push her back and forth rapidly between door frame, ceiling, and dragon. The woody appendages and wall-ripping agility gave her gait an unsettlingly arachnid appearance, but Annabelle was so relieved she could have kissed the woman. The witch's flowing dark hair was in complete disarray, but she held Immy firmly against her hip, her other hand shielding her eyes as she advanced.
You had dreams too?
The witch asked, pulling Annabelle gently away from the door and taking up her position beside it. Dark, fern-like fronds extruded down her forearm. They both watched the things dig into the ghostly wall, extending reluctantly over the portal. The worst of the radiance and heat cut off in moments. The Surthozoa wanted to squirm, to shy away. The light was so hard that it actually tested the incredible resilience of the ancient plant. However, the relief its shade provided allowed their eyes to adjust a little. Susan held fast in her desire for it to persist a while longer.
Thanks, Susan. I'm glad you're here.
Yeah, Immy and I both had these crazy visions.
It was shared too, we had the same one.
Right, Immy?
The sprite nodded absently, absorbed in watching the vast, dangerous ripples of unbound energy sheeting outward in every direction. There was an underlying draw there too, harder to detect but insistent. Magically, it was like two mighty ocean currents brushing over and under each other at depth. Chris was both drawing in and pushing out monumental forces in the ether.
I had dreams too.
Lillian rasped drily from the kitchen.
Terrible, ancient battles.
I had to watch poor old Jethry horribly tortured.
Susan admitted, shuddering in the grasp of vivid recollection before she continued.
This has to be caused by something. We're all here, in the ether. We all woke up at the same moment as far as I can tell. We need to think calmly now, to look for a cause.
But what do we do about this in the meantime?
Asked Annabelle, flinging an unsure gesture toward the luminescent bathroom beam seeping out through tiny gaps in Susan's now glowing shield. Susan was right, but there were immediate concerns to address too. She favored triage and action to ward off mounting fear.
Lillian is hurt. Petra couldn't do anything, bless her.
Is he still asleep in there? How is that possible? And why the hell are we all in the damn ether anyway?
As if summoned by her plea for answers, the very fabric of the universe ruptured. Annabelle didn't actually see it happen. She was knocked sideways into the wall. It felt far more substantial against the side of her head than was fair, given their ethereal surroundings. She'd once seen Chris leap straight through a wall. A thunderclap like a dozen simultaneous lightning strikes momentarily dazed her of already frazzled sensibilities. Annabelle started, determination fighting upward through a heavy blanket of pain, confusion, and sensory overload. Her ears throbbed. She was slumped against the wall, her body tangled with something soft, bony, and weighty. Of course it was Susan and Imianth, she realized moments later. Annabelle heaved her entire body upward.
She had to do something, anything but surrender to the beckoning maw of unconsciousness. Vomit surged into her throat the moment she gained her feet. She held it down by will alone. Woozy, slow shuffles were all she could manage as her bearings returned. Susan groaned beside her, cursing under her breath, as she too picked herself up. Thankfully her outgrowths still blocked the worst of the violent photons.
Proscribed.
Immy muttered from the floor, eyes bleary and unfocused.
Tessellation PR, proscribed.
Annabelle was just thankful the sprite hadn't been too damaged by whatever hit them. She spouted nonsense at the best of times. Her tune changed when Immy weakly raised an accusing finger, and Annabelle saw that the sprite was in fact quite lucid. There was a tiny, darkness-rimmed hole in her living room. Meat was coming through. There were long, three-dimensional polygons of neat, perfectly carved, geometric meat apparating in her home. Annabelle screamed, shrill and long. She didn't mean to, but she screamed with just about everything she had left. It was wrong. They came on and on, zipping through a wobbly little silvery disk of nothingness. It looked like a liquid quarter suspended in midair by darkness alone. Her mind shied away from focusing on it. But in the moment, that peculiarity barely registered. It was the flying blocks of flesh that caught her eye, that sent adrenaline howling through her arteries like a cold north wind. square after square, triangle after triangle, a hexagon every now and then. One by one, neat as you please, 1,000 semi-trucks rolling in convoy. Her brain couldn't be working, she refused to believe what she was seeing. Pieces of flesh were flocking through into her living room, schooling about in midair like agitated fish. They were dark and so finely cut on the leading face, but the cross sections were gruesome, far too detailed, and dripping along their length with disgusting seepage. For an instant, she thought she'd seen part of an eyeball, or the dull flash of metal. The disgusting swarm twitched as one, jolting into coherence as a final wet chunk materialized and the miniature rift vanished without fanfare. Individual pieces suddenly found volition, racing toward the floor, slotting together by some predetermined pattern or strict order. Annabelle did vomit when she realized that there were two dainty, dark-skinned feet rapidly assembling themselves on her new floorboards. It was some bloody, swishy, nightmarish parody of a child's block game. Square in the square hole, triangle in the triangle hole, simple, Lady Narlocky's was coming, some assembly required. First, returned 100 lifetimes of bottled anger, rage the likes of which would snap a weaker mind. Then unquenchable pain, the ultimate test of will. For pain was but an illusion, another sense like sight, or taste, and potentially just as delicious. So Rayla endured the blinding, searing pain as reconnecting nerves registered the trauma done to them in tessellation. She had been burned alive once before, and this was worse, if only for a few moments. Pain to anger, anger to rage, rage to force of will, and onward, smelting slowly into iron-bound control. Though the interlude of existential agony was expected, and Rayla was no stranger to pain, the power of the sensations rocked her returned psyche to its foundations. In a way, it was a most powerful affirmation of life and purpose. That was what she believed at least, and it had served her well so far. A lot could be accomplished if pain was no barrier. There were good reasons such spells were banned, of course. Many lacked the mental fortitude to survive the process intact, though their physical bodies returned to perfect health in a matter of days. Considering the magics involved, and the reality of what she'd just done, Rayla considered it a small price to pay. It only lasted a few seconds, her neurons soon registering that they were once more knit seamlessly together, and that their stocks of vital transmitter molecules were recovering to normal levels. Rayla was back, and she was spitting mad. Her gamble had been successful. The young dragon couldn't defend from an avenue of attack he'd never imagined. It was no sure thing, using such a series of complex spells, but it was all she could think to do when just minutes before, his aura began to flare so dangerously. Of all the fool things the boy had done so far, of all the, tonight? This? A whopping great barrier of wild, impenetrable magic at 3 in the morning? After all the sniveling about being unable to hold one, this was irony on a majestic scale. The evidence was stacking up that he did these things to her on purpose, illogical though that may be. That she even considered that that might actually be the case drove her wild. Rayla decided she was going to flay him, to slowly peel his skin. Just as soon as she made sure he was okay, without even opening her eyes, the elf took her first breath. Her naked toes registered the cool texture of wooden floorboards, despite their ghostly, malleable appearance. Rayla took a step toward the incredible nimbus of discordant energy dominating her senses. She had to stop him, to stop this mad draw of power permeating through the ether. Though she could admire the remarkably efficacious barrier she'd been trying to dissect for the last hour, this new madness had to end right now. By instinct, her thumb trailed over the activation runes on two of her rings. The times she'd employed such magic in the past were almost exclusively to deal destruction and death to her enemies. So she summoned battle robes to address her nakedness, and her scourge to address her dragon problem. The leather-bound shaft of her old weapon felt good as it materialized in her grasp, heavy, and giving just a little as she squeezed. It had been a long time since she'd had need of it, and a bloodlust thrill shivered through her at the reunion. By touch she twisted the bone ring on its half to the position which would induce debilitating, diaphragm-bruising breathlessness. She banished the 6-inch blade tip that turned the weapon from magical rod into short spear, into steel-belching death-thrower, as needed. It might be more satisfying to introduce him to her creation's harsher settings, but expediency was her goal now. It was apparent the mad young dragon had no qualms about killing himself, and possibly half of her city in the bargain. And he was supposed to be lying low. Already her senses probed at the vortex of repellent energy just ahead of her. Once again, his untrained, overactive imagination had spat forth a new challenge. Another obstacle the likes of which she hadn't quite seen before. In the balance, that was to his credit. He just forced her to use at least 2 proscribed, incredibly dangerous spells. Chris wasn't boring. Perhaps that was why she was falling deeper and deeper into infatuation. "Not now, girl!" Rayla snapped as his chief mistress started forward out of her stupor, an unformed, no doubt banal question on her quivering lips. She lashed at them out of instinct, establishing her authority, reassuring them with her familiar airs. "You witchling, pull back those filthy tendrils when I am prepared. It is good to see at least one of you has some sense. I can smell barbecue of ungrateful vampire, and look, the blueberry gnat is down for the count. Delightful!" Up close, it was obvious exactly how the dragon was spending that colossal draw he put out into the ether. Inside his defenses, aspects of his spellwork were suddenly laid bare to her superior arcane knowledge. The elf snorted, realizing it was all a giant house of cards held together by huffing and puffing. When his magical spore had redoubled a few minutes ago, she'd been forced to pull out all the stops. It was good that she did, too. What she saw now was about the most inefficient use of energetic potential she could imagine. The wastage spilled from him, photomantic conversion in every band. light so potent as to puncture cloth, flesh, and even stone. However, Rayla was no stranger to the notion of dangerous wavelengths, visible or otherwise. The dragon must still be asleep, locked in some fever dream, struggling against phantom enemies. She theorized that previously, but this confirmed it. He would not knowingly put his little broodmares in such danger. Once more, she tugged at the thin, ever-present leash of energy coiling back to her nexus. It expanded in her mind's eye, and once there, it took only moments to find and select the incantation she would need from the vast library at her fingertips. Opening that rift, even on such a small scale, had cost her a century's hoarded power. But Rayla had been laying away magic on a time frame that would boggle the minds of mere mortals. She was also in possession of a most wonderful golden magical goose, if she could keep the beast from destroying himself. Her solution was elegantly simple, as the best always were. More fool Lillian for not seeing it, though the version taught to vampires was much more limited in function. "Now, witch!" Rayla commanded, never doubting for a moment that she would be obeyed. The pre-hung spell raced toward her, up and up from her nexus, the tether yawning wide for a moment as it squeezed though. Darkness enfolded her, completely binding, all-encompassing darkness. It reminded her of home, of the pitch-black caves she'd explored when she managed to sneak away from her mother's Minders. Rayla vanished into a hazy blur as she stepped through the doorway, light bending seamlessly to either side, then crashing back together and scattering wildly in her wake. It was easy to find him. Even without the use of her eyes, he burned like an open flame to her magical senses. It was hot. She almost tripped once, tangling in some ethereal shadow of fabric or curtain hung in the room. It was a good thing he'd had this misadventure in the ether. His new house would be on fire if he tried anything like this foolishness in the norm. Judging she was close enough, her shins bumping what must be a bed frame, Rayla wound back blindly with her right hand. The scourge came down with more than a little vindictive glee. She heard the big lout's breath evacuate his lungs in a deep, violent rush. His spell collapsed almost anticlimactically. That wouldn't do, so she hit him again for good measure, and was rewarded with a satisfyingly wheezy groan. Judging it safe, Rayla released her invisibility spell and turned off the nerve impulse function on her scourge. It was just a fancy weighted rod of wood and metal now, and as she towered over his shaking, naked perfection, she snarled as relief and frustration both broke free inside her. "Idiot!" Their eyes met as she brought the dead weapon down across his thighs, so satisfying to vent her bottled emotion. Then again and again before he could stop her, it all came out in a rush. "Idiot, idiot! Cretin! On the night my mother arrives? You loathsome, ungrateful beast! I'll dash!" Rayla didn't get a chance to finish her threats or his well-deserved beating. Along with the dragon and all his rallying brood, she was floored by the arrival of a mental presence so vast, so incomprehensible, that they were struck dumb where they stood. It was on them in moments, inside them, inside their minds. A thing so vastly powerful that it brushed aside Rayla's millennia-honed mental barriers like flotsam before a hurricane. It knew her. It knew every detail of every atom, every thought, every cell, every memory, every private fear and dark desire. It was not gentle, and it was not pleased. So the elf thought, as she gaped like a dockside-brained fish at the scale of mental violation done to her. The dragon had good reason for his midnight photomancy after all. He'd been trying to keep a god at bay. Rayla felt her jellied legs give out as it finished sifting through her head, looking for what she couldn't begin to guess. The thing found her tether and rode effortlessly back down it, dissecting the secrets of her nexus without judgment or censor. There was a brief reprieve as it turned its colossal attention to the others inside the house, and finally back to its errant child. For that must be what this was, Rayla reasoned. If not the dragon's celestial patron, then who? An elder demon? One of the great foe beings from legend? Unlikely, given their continued existence. She was undone, ruined. There would be no hiding this night from the synod, from her enemies, from her mother. The extra scrutiny would fray the delicate tapestry of deceit she'd woven. She would be laid bare, along with the dragon. It would be a miracle if she even survived to face that feeding frenzy, let alone escaping this encounter with her sanity intact. Too much of this mind-riffling and her brain would begin to bleed. The geometric pattern of her recent travel would be etched through her flesh and bone for days still, structural weaknesses unlikely to hold under prolonged strain. "Enough!" Rayla shuddered, somehow the thing spoke, and every syllable hurt. "I denigrate to speak this bleeding tongue lest your idiocy dash all this effort to nothing. Desolation dragged me down along with you, it may be what I deserve for leaving such as you unsupervised." The jaunty, booming voice lashed directly into Rayla's mind. The divine didn't really speak, it couldn't. It had no bodily presence here in the ether or anywhere else, she suspected. Instead, it made itself understood. It seared words into her neurons by direct stimulation. It hijacked the inner workings of her brain without a second thought, and dabbled there as it pleased. It made her simultaneously hear, read, and recall the words, dredging up long past memories. She even felt them flash across her fingertips in four different arcane languages used by the blind. Chris groaned audibly beside her, somehow managing to move under the immense mental pressure it exerted. "Temper your flailing!" Rayla's head rocked back and she screamed in chorus with his brewmates scattered throughout the house. Her skull felt like it wanted to split in two. They would die like this. If it spoke death, every cell in her body would reluctantly obey. "I felt you tugging at this accursed muck like one of them, and came to warn you against it. It can be felt, and our foe is resourceful." The entity chuckled, or that's how it seemed. Rayla felt it rattle her bones. "You have grown stronger, my little minnow, my indulgent experiment. And I see you have multiplied. That is to be commended. Your struggles were infantile, but that is what you are, an infant. So remember your place and heed me now. The enemy's servants are here. I can sense their taint. Root them out before they damage our works. If you allow them to come again in force, you will be left to your fate. I will have no part in more of that foolishness.
Rayla processed the words, the warning, the priceless information direct from the celestial horse's mouth.
I must leave here lest your companions succumb to their frailty. Remember, do not grasp at existence until it rips, the results are inherently capricious. Coax, finesse, seek knowledge as you grow, accomplish more with less. And do not resist my presence like that again. Farewell for now, little minnow, you show such potential.
Wait. Rayla managed, surprising even herself with hidden reserves of tenacity in the face of such ancient, mind-bending power. That this thing, this godlike potential energy lowered itself to direct communication was an opportunity that could not be squandered. Every syllable forced between her lips was a battle, slurred and garbled like she was speaking into a torrent of onrushing water.
How goes? The war? It paused, and they all felt the bleed through of bitter regret, betrayal, and sour hopelessness. The celestial entity weighed up 1,000,000 placating lies and discarded them all in a moment. It let them touch the husk of a once godlike resolve, slowly chipped and hollowed away over 13-odd billion years of defeat piled atop retreat.
Badly.
It left as abruptly as it had come. A shark swimming away from a school of bait fish too small to bother snapping up. The problem was, Rayla hadn't realized she'd been swimming those waters at all. She hadn't truly understood that they existed, or that metaphorical sharks did either. Eyes opened, and the scale of her own tiny existence laid bare, she now clawed desperately just to hold onto the tatters of comprehension she had gleaned. She clung on, bludgeoning her considerable mental acuity to perform as she dove back down the rabbit hole, seeking refuge and self in the embrace and folding pattern of her nexus. The disturbing part was that there had been an unseen, shark-infested ocean all along, and she'd been swimming obliviously for thousands of years. Content in her superior understanding of magic, the power and privilege it brought her, she had in fact been blind all along. She'd guessed at Chris' origins, and spoken descriptive words without any comprehension for the reality they woefully described. Now she had a terrible, unforgettable sense of scale, and new meaning for words previously spoken in blissful ignorance. Knowledge was power, immortal, but it could also be a hurtful thing. That sweet oblivion was gone now, forever shattered because she just experienced a few small ripples of that great shark's passing. In magical terms, it felt as though the earth was crumbling beneath her feet, falling away into nothingness. Rayla's steel-forged sense of self surged, reinforcement rushed up to meet her retreat. She began reknitting, and found herself sprawled on an ethereal bed beside the root of all her problems. She was exhausted to the cellular level, but she had enough left to satisfy one last pressing need. Her scourge felt unbearably heavy as she raised it with rubbery arms. It reminded her of skirmishes thousands of years in the past, of fighting to the brink of collapse because victory and survival required nothing less. Survival was barely a challenge these days, but victory was an eternal battle, as nebulous and fleeting as peace, love, even the stars themselves.
Ara.
She had no breath, no energy left for words, but her scourge communicated on a profound level. Rayla had a lot of feelings bottled up, and they exploded from the tip of her staff as it touched the dragon's bare skin. She took pity after one pathetic blow, recognizing the futility. They were well and truly tired together now, she and this dragon. Only now, she understood enough to question the wisdom of the choices that led her here to this moment.
But how is she still alive?
Annabelle paced behind the couch, thumping her fist on the dark leather corner as she turned for another pass.
I heard what she said about paradoxes, but that was a pile of burning horse shit. You can't just be both dead and not dead, cut yourself up like that, and sew it all back together.
How did she do it? Susan jumped in her seat as the fist came down beside her ear. Lillian noticed, and reached behind herself to grab the pacing young woman.
Please, Annabelle, sit down. You're driving everyone crazy back there. We should be more concerned with the message.
Haley voiced her thoughts as Annabelle gave in and took a leg-bouncing seat, squeezing Susan's shoulder in apology.
The implications, well, they're not good. At least some of Chris' ability can be felt by demons.
Petra supplied from her beanbag, scratching absently at her flaky silver scales. The last crusty patches around her belly button were sloughing off, and it was a delightfully itchy process.
Brilliant new ones already shimmered underneath, and the baby below was just fine, as far as magical medicine could tell.
Just call them demons, it's the best word we have, and it's not likely to change. That shouldn't really be a surprise,
Lillian said, looking around at the gathered brood. She met every pair of eyes, liking the determination she saw there.
That was good, because they would need it. We've suspected for months that he's unique, that his abilities are derived from unknown, powerful sources. I am pregnant after all.
Yes, and I'm trying to ask what do we do with that knowledge? Haley stood her ground, holding the huge vampire's dark eyes and glaring right back.
What, in practical and magical terms, are we collectively going to do about that?
Silence reigned. Claire fingered the heavy lump of gold at her neck, glancing over at her mother.
I think I should take over our magical defenses,
Imianth suddenly announced, hopping up off the bare floorboards. The sprite leaped onto the big wooden coffee table around which the brood had gathered their council. She began to march, a little blue general rallying her troops for battle.
We don't want any more episodes of dragon fuckery, and I've a few choice ideas about sapping if that mean old nasty ever dares to show his ugly face again. Who's with me? I say if it doesn't want to help, it can piss right off. I'll give it a megavoltaic parting gift.
You want to zap a Devine? We've got that on record, right?
Susan shook her head in awe. The whole experience had been sobering for her, utterly terrifying. Whatever that thing had been, however well-intentioned its warning, it had nearly killed them just by showing up. Prudence would suggest they hope it never returned, and appease in any way they could if it ever did. Imianth, however, had the spirit of an angry kitten, and reckless courage in spades.
It deserves it.
Imi retorted with angry gusto.
Looking through our heads like that, frightening Master half to death. It's the reason he burned Petra and Lillian, you know. He was afraid to let it close again, he told me.
He'll be okay, Imi.
Annabelle soothed from the sidelines, quietly collecting the excited sprite into her lap.
He's pulled through worse, he always throws himself into work when he's upset.
You'll see. We may have a few ideas for magical defense.
Claire added slowly, and Petra nodded her approval. Though crystal refills will have to slow down if we want to experiment.
I don't know anything about fending off demons though, does anyone?
Rayla.
Annabelle and Lillian spoke as one, turning to smile savagely at each other.
How much leverage do we have with her?
Petra wondered aloud.
She must have bribed the Fairy Queen something fierce to keep this quiet.
Haley reasoned, marveling at the political slipperiness of their ruling lady.
There are global detection networks to trace any rift activity, that's why the barrier exists after all. The Synod will want to know what happened. People on Maginet are reporting that they felt whatever Chris was doing all the way over on the East Coast.
The Synod are bureaucrats.
Lillian explained patiently. Haley and some of the others didn't understand the way political power actually played.
They have their hands full. Rayla has more wiggle room there than you'd think, though outright lying will almost certainly come back to bite her in the ass.
Do we ask for her advice then, her help? What if she wants in?
Annabelle put the question to them all, voicing a possibility none of them particularly wanted to confront.
You're quiet, Michelle, what are you thinking?
Leave her be.
Susan murmured. She's confronting her sense of duty.
You're right, I am, but it's okay, Susan.
Michelle smiled wryly, removing the hand that had been pressed over her eyes as she thought in circles.
Amy's actually got the right plan of action. We start with small, achievable goals and focus individually on our strengths.
We work as a unit to bring those strengths together, to defend ourselves and our home. We practice, we exercise, we gain skills, and we prepare.
And Rayla?
Michelle paused, giving the elf some thought as she decided how to break it to them.
Rayla is already as embroiled in this as we are, more so in fact. Some of you might not like to admit it, but she is. She just broke about 100 magical rules, risked censure from her superiors, and cut herself into stewing meat in an attempt to help him. Her position and political power are now locked to Chris' well-being, and we in turn depend on her to protect us politically. Rayla is functionally a brood member, just minus the mind-blowing sex.
That hung in the air between the brewmates, full of quiet tension ready to ignite. More than a few nervous glances were shot Lillian's way.
What?
The vampire leered back.
There's a reason you chose me to be his chaperone to this ludicrous private dinner next week. I'm not intimidated by Rayla, though she is a spiteful, canny bitch.
So, I guess no more orgiastic evenings of sexy debauchery then? Annabelle tried to lighten the mood, though her heart wasn't really in it.
That one was my bad, ladies.
It was tricky to joke about having your mind sifted by some metaphysically superior entity. So was the prospect of their bitch overlord becoming involved in their strange, finally settling family.
It's no one's fault.
Susan said, trying to make sure Annabelle didn't have an opportunity to take blame upon herself unchallenged.
None of us knew he might be dangerous like that, on the brink of exhaustion.
Chris didn't know either.
I know, Susan, thanks.
When are we going to talk about the dreams?
Haley asked as the brood quieted, haunted by their own recollections of the fateful evening.
We're not.
Chris rumbled from the doorway leading to the goblin-carved reception room.
It would be best if we all tried to forget what we saw.
Haley actually squeaked, her whole body jerking in the squashy leather seat. A mixture of disapproval, amusement, and quiet warmth met Chris' near silent arrival. He just returned from testing some of the improvements Imianth had suggested for their runic prototype. The chill and salty damp of a deserted Greenlandic shoreline still clung to his skin. The nascent magical device hadn't melted into a pile of golden slag under stress, so Chris figured it was ready to at least introduce his ladies to. Their feedback would be essential. They were going to be some of the first to wear it. After recent events, Chris couldn't rush it into service fast enough. He was tired of feeling handcuffed, of being overtaken by events as he struggled to right the previous calamity in his life, of putting his ladies in danger just by association. Not that some overly convoluted magical armor would do anything if that damn god entity returned for another chit-chat. He was still seething about that. It had called him Minnow, and the assessment had been generous. That thing was a cosmic monstrosity, a terrible mismatch of an adversary. It was a hungry bear to his exhausted salmon, a heron to his freshly spawned tadpole. It could skewer him from a plane of existence he could not comprehend. With a razor beak, his soft flesh would never deflect. He didn't appreciate its convoluted warnings, and abhorred its mental intrusion. That his mates had suffered its indignity this time was unforgivable. Its claims of ownership, even parenthood, were rejected and void as far as he was concerned. Drawn from tumultuous thoughts by their silent regard, Chris approached his gathered brood. Haley looked like she'd been told off. Retracting on herself, he brushed a reassuring touch against her upper arm.
I'm glad you're all here. Would you please take a look at this and suggest modifications for comfort and usability?
Chris leaned over the back of the sofa, completely overshadowing the little werebison for a moment as he dumped the warm contents of a black drawstring bag onto the table. The thoroughly drained magical prototype slithered free,
a chaotic jumble of precious metal. He needn't have worried about Petra's reaction. Still in her beautiful half-form to speed the healing process, her nostrils flared and she leaned forward eagerly to get a better look.
Chris.
Emmy whined, jumping out of Annabelle's grasp to start sorting the various linking chains and golden tablets into radial order around the central facet housing his purple scale.
You have no sense of presentation at all.
Chris smiled weakly as the jumbled rune phrases were whipped into order, soon arranged like burnished golden rays around a cartoonish sundae.
And why should I, when the gorgeous architect is right here to do the presenting? Go on, Emmy, tell them about your invention.
Emmy's blushes were tricky to notice sometimes, but when she finally looked up and met his eyes, her cheeks were adorably beetroot.
Oh my god, look how many tiny runes there are on the ring in the center.
Susan marveled as she noticed secondary detail beyond the blocky chunks of magical script writ large on gold. The piece was a lavish example of both craftsmanship and magic, like some precious relic recently unearthed from a bygone golden era.
That's just the framework and energy distribution construct.
The sprite chirped happily.
The golden tiles actually spell out the possible incantations it can automatically manifest.
Everyone looked at Emmy a little aghast. Chris was so proud of her, and found himself grinning heartily for the first time in a few days. Claire actually cocked her head in saurian curiosity, as if seeing the sprite in a new light.
So this is why you've been sneaking away in the afternoons?
Annabelle teased her little lover.
Go on, Emmy, show us.
It was snowing bitterly when Chris tromped down into their new home to collect Claire for their impromptu date. That morning he'd been out helping Stephen on his latest project for a few hours after his magical chores. However, even brawny werbison had their limits when it came to working in the cold. When Chris saw the headline he'd been waiting for, he took the opportunity to make good on an overdue promise that he found his feisty little mate in their grotto, sprawled amongst a massive pile of entangled bedding and blankets. It was sweltering, she and her mother had the little fireplace stoked high, blasting heat turning the decorated hollow into a kiln. A dragon hatchery, his inner voice supplied proudly. Chris looked down on the two dragonesses with unbridled love, nostrils flaring as he caught their heady, mingled scents. Claire looked up from her phone as he squeezed inside, smiling as she kicked her bare legs enticingly. Petra actually mewed from her little nest, sleepily pulling aside a silky sheet and open-legged invitation. He'd already made love to her first thing that morning, chipping away at the growing backlog of empty crystals. Out of necessity, he willfully ignored her.
Hey, beautiful.
Chris crouched at the base of the redhead's nest of pillows and blankets, leaning in to brush his lips against her shoulder as he spoke.
I promised you a date a while back. Are you feeling up for an adventure?
Both dragonesses perked up at that, their lounging posture shifting effortlessly to graceful attentiveness. Claire nodded happily, drawing him wordlessly down into a soft, passionate kiss. Petra pouted a little as Claire disentangled herself and put on her discarded leggings.
Don't worry, I've got plans for you later.
He assured the blonde dragoness, who wrapped herself tighter in her tangle of bedding to prove she was feeling sulky.
Where are we going?
Claire asked as they embraced for departure.
Don't we need to take anything? And spoil the surprise?
He replied, delighted by the anticipation he read in her expression. Go on then.
She sighed indulgently.
You and your surprises.
It was a big phase, a long jaunt of unnatural, disembodied limbo through the ether. They chased the receding nighttime out across the Pacific Ocean, crossing down into the southern hemisphere, swapping fall for the last days of an already hot, dry springtime. Over the past weeks, often at night if he was feeling restless, Chris had strategically traveled the world by orb and ether. His ability to phase from place to place was reliant, as far as he could tell, on committing to memory some aspect of uniqueness about the destination he desired. He could jump back to Jethry's farm with relative ease and safely, but not to somewhere he'd never visited or never seen. So he'd sought out remote spots on the other continents, sometimes spending hours just sitting, or practicing idle magic as he and his dragon got a feel for them. The near-disastrous mission to Brazil had sparked the idea. It was how he discovered the stark beauty of Greenland among other places, perfect for his broadening experiments. The advantages of such a network of places, to which he could arrive in moments, were obvious. Combined with his ability to punch through the sky at supersonic speeds inside a bubble of his own power, he suspected he could deploy to almost anywhere on the globe in a matter of hours. That sort of mobility was a godlike power in its own right, even if it left him exhausted and a bit woozy to execute, especially with a passenger that he knew he was flexing his magical muscle somewhat rashly. After the latest harrowing visit from the entity Rayla named a god, he found it harder to care. Some of his human reluctance and tentativeness had shriveled. That giant celestial asshole barged into his life without a second thought, invading his mind and traumatizing his brood. It did it because it could. Roddick played out his twisted plot because he could. If might truly made right, as the world seemed to poke at him afresh every day, then why should he hold back? He knew it was a dangerous path to tread, a self-fulfilling road that might corrupt him, but no one else seemed to be restraining themselves for the sake of prudence, even common human decency. So who was going to object to him using his burgeoning might to take his mate on a date? Why should he care if they did? Who would put their life on the line to stop him? Smoke wafted, heavy in the nighttime breeze as Chris and Claire jolted out of the ether, stepping hand in hand onto a carpet of rough, desiccated grasses and snapping twigs. Claire looked around with the dragon's eyes, collecting herself after the discomfort of Chris' near teleportation. She pierced the smoky darkness with ease, looking up to see an enormous, strangely branched tree arching above them. There was a distinctive scent to the strange, sparse forest he'd brought her to, familiar and potent. It was also really, really hot. Australia?
Claire guessed as the smell brought back memories of a playground her mother had sometimes taken her to long ago. It had had an enormous eucalyptus tree too, and she remembered being fascinated by the strange, fragrant nuts always scattered underneath it.
Got it in one. Chris chuckled. Now, how hungry are you feeling?
A few hundred kilometers to the south, there's a wildfire front half the width of Colorado. Claire blinked, processing what he'd said.
Chris, I don't, really?
Her initial shock was wearing off, and her dragon was warming to the bombastic extravagance of the idea.
This is crazy.
Crazy good. He countered, flashing a boyish grin of excitement. He'd been anticipating this for weeks now, watching for the right opportunity.
It's crazy crazy, you big ninny.
I could never channel that much power. I can almost feel it from here, the fire is huge.
I'd pop, Chris.
Besides, won't there be a lot of people to see us? Firefighters, aircraft? The mental shrug charm weakens exponentially with more eyes to deceive.
We'll be on the thick of it. No one will see clearly with all the smoke, so I'm thinking the charm will hold.
It's not proscribed in the Revelation Agreement. The other problem is easily fixed too. You're going to fill a crystal that should put us a month ahead of our orders in one fell swoop. It seems terribly risky.
Come on, Claire, cut loose. I've been dying to fly with you and this is perfect.
We'll actually be doing some good too. People's houses and livelihood are going up in smoke. Thousands are being evacuated ahead of the blaze.
Chris leaned closer, murmuring enticingly.
We could do all sorts of things in the middle of a raging firestorm. Who know?
That last enticement seemed to do the trick. They flew as full dragons, low and fast through the pre-dawn.
His mate's excitement was palpable, her sinuous ruby-scaled neck arching back to snap playfully in his direction. She flew circles around him, quite literally looping over his stalwart flapping, darting and ducking through the hot, smoke-hazed air. She was beautiful. As human, so as dragon, compact and elegant compared to his longer, bulkier form. Coached and raised by a true master of the skies, Claire's confidence in flight was something to behold. If he were an eagle, she was a sassy swallow. A swift interceptor to his lumbering cargo jet. Their passage went unnoticed as they sped south over parched forest and brown, desiccated farmland. Chris didn't know exactly how the charm Petra had drilled into him manifested in the minds of those few worried humans that looked skyward. Perhaps the dragons appeared as high-flying birds, or water planes rushing to target flare-ups ahead of the raging inferno. Their minds shied away from the truth, seeing something expected rather than something fantastic. It didn't matter, so long as there were no screams and no cellular phones pointed skyward, no gathering of pitchforks. Closer to the fire, it hardly mattered. Already hazy, visibility steadily worsened until even his keen, multi-spectra dragon eyes were confounded by the scattering effect of so many airborne particulates. The heat hit his scales like a physical blow, then they were in the midst of the firestorm, lofted violently by superheated air as it raced skyward. Claire chirped happily, a dragon's laugh, and dove into a cracking wall of orange flame almost 10 meters high. He lost sight of her, and circled warily above, listening to her crashing about between burning trees, roaring triumphantly as she drank down flame and heat on an unprecedented scale. She was in her element, and the fire seemed to lose its will around her as she charged about, rampaging up the flame front. Her serpentine head rested lazily on the pulped remains of a burning log when he landed beside her. Her back legs kicked out, throwing bright embers across her back and flanks. Her rounded, pregnant belly sat comfortably in a hollow bowl of hot ashes and scorched dirt.
Too much.
She purred up at him, rolling half into her side in invitation.
I've never felt flame like that. It actually fought me. It came off second best.
You doubted?
Never, but imagining and seeing our different experiences.
The coals were near painful on the scaled pads of his feet, and he marveled at her ability, her aspect of fire. It seemed alien and incredible to him. He had a flash of perspective regarding how others must see his own ether affinity. She'd really sucked the marrow out of the fire's bones, enough for him to sidle in on four legs and snuggle down beside her in the charcoal. The burnt forest cracked and hissed around them as the two dragons entwined, red and purple. Trees toppled to the passion of their lovemaking. Claire was so relieved when he proffered her a fresh baked diamond. The thing would have come up to her knees as a human. Her body was teeming with power, full to the brim with converted heat energy that wailed for a magical outlet. She actually belched flames at the peak of her climax. Her beautiful ruby throat bulged as she writhed sinuously beneath him. She glowed from within as a pillar of almost white fire and vivid, lingering sparks leapt from her roaring gullet. It was a violent, charring heat, lancing through several trees and setting them alight once more as the stream of fire shot skyward. When they were finally done, it would have taken a trip to a car wash to tell them apart by color. Both dragons were covered tip to tail in reddish dirt, gray ash, and dark coal. Both were grinning like happy hogs too, surrounded by the destruction and carnage of their unrestrained coupling, the complete unleashing of their dragons. Eventually, Chris eased more control back to his human thought processes. As they lazed in the hazy, smoky early morning, he carefully began the process of crafting a complex ether orb. There were a lot of parameters to anticipate if he was going to use it to carry them through the rest of the bushfire in comfort and safety. They were far from done with this productive little adventure. Chris looked down at the huge, globular diamond clutched against his mate's belly, like a kitten with yarn. He made it big on purpose, excessively so, he thought. The thing was almost a third full already. He'd underestimated both her and the fire. The energy she could absorb from a large blaze like this one was incredible, definitely exceeding her rank classification. She was going to have a clutch of full diamonds to sit on if they went ahead and smothered this enormous fire all the way out, though perhaps that would be a little too conspicuous. Two dragons rose back into the air, though their wings stayed tucked against their flanks as they nestled together. Encapsulated and conveyed by a huge ball of aether force, they shot west and south, ready to head off the roaring inferno. Inside the bubble of their conveyance, the universe's laws danced to a different tune, if only for a moment, as they passed. There were four different forks beside each ornate place setting. That was how Chris knew for sure that he was going to hate this dinner. He could put up with being squeezed into a tight collared shirt and tie. The company he had to look forward to wasn't exactly the lighthearted type, but he understood the necessity. Besides, he owed Rayla at least several favors after her latest intervention. More of a rescue, perhaps. Who needed four forks? What the hell were they going to be served? It almost gave him the excuse he wanted to turn tail and scamper away home. Annabelle was making fancy sloppy joes and having a movie night with the rest of the ladies. Chris loved sloppy joes, and Annabelle always sprinkled crushed potato chips in the burgers and gave him extra pickles. Instead of that, he had a four-fork dinner and an evening with Rayla's mother. From what he'd heard, the woman was a terror.
They're late. Stop fretting.
Lillian murmured at his side, her silk-clad hip bumping him. Long fingers squeezed gently on his forearm as she leaned slightly closer.
Try to relax.
The old girl is nearly insufferable. She'll delight in toying with you if you give her a chance.
Like the world's most sadistic cat with a wounded mouse.
Chris was about to protest that unfavorable comparison, but wasn't given the chance. The thick, iron-bound elm doors at the end of the huge, church-ceiling banquet hall parted ominously. It was so typical of the elves to be late, a subtle assertion of dominance, yet one too petty to protest. More games of power and political movement, practiced over thousands of years. Rayla's illumination charms brightened theatrically, shining forth from recessed alcoves high on the walls. A dark, white-haired elf floated into view down the connecting corridor, heading a small procession. She was near the mirror of her daughter, or more accurately, Rayla favored her mother uncannily. Chris turned slightly, cocking an eyebrow at Lillian in silent question. She gave a tiny nod, but didn't take her attention from the advancing elf. Matriarch Vash Narlaki's really floated, and it had nothing at all to do with her preternatural elegance or grace. She cut a regal, imposing figure, clad in a stiff green dress of martial attitude, with padded shoulders and knee-length skirts. Silver threads glimmered from within the verdant weave. From his recent experience dabbling in metallurgy, Chris reasoned that the garment was reinforced with a magically sensitive alloy, probably mithril. No expense was spared in her defense, even in the heart of her daughter's sanctuary. The clan matriarch was indeed tall, slender, and graceful, like all of her kind Chris had encountered so far. But Vash towered over her trailing bodyguard and daughter, matching Chris eye to eye by virtue of being suspended a foot above the marble floor on a rolling hive of frightfully large, metallic sheen beetles. He was so dumbfounded by the absurd conveyance that all of his prepared manners and schooled responses flew out the window. He stared openly, barely registering the second, sword-toting, elf shadowing her mistress's disquieting train. Rayla almost slunk in her mother's preposterous wake, bringing up the rear of the dark elf trio. The territory ruler struggled to master a sour expression, more suited to a petulant teen than a several-thousand-year-old spellmaster. They were big, ugly bugs. Earwood-looking bastards that strained upward, clawing and crawling over each other to perfectly meet each falling elfin slipper with a column of armored insect flesh. Those left behind scurried to the sides, leapfrogging forward to the vanguard with all the speed and unsettling alacrity of a startled roach. Once ahead, they assembled themselves unerringly into chitinous stepping stones, repeating the cycle as Lady Vash advanced around the enormous dining table. Chris was fascinated and disturbed in equal measure, imagining that it must feel somewhat like walking on a crunchy airport travelator. It made his skin crawl just watching, but it was mesmerizing all the same. Magic, he was reminded, was old and bizarre beyond what he might personally imagine in a dozen lifetimes. He was still looking down when the bugs slowed in front of him. As his attention shot upward toward the ancient elf's face, her amused eyes and teasing smirk, Chris realized that the distraction was all part of the elaborate, never-ending game.
Good evening, dragon.
Vash Narlaki smiled down at him from her chittering pulpit. She offered a bejeweled hand, not to shake, but palm down, to kiss.
My, my, you are quite the specimen. My daughter has been positively reticent, hasn't she?
Chris looked from her dainty fingers, past an array of no doubt magically potent jewelry, up to the millennial old elf's knowing eyes. Those eyes had witnessed firsthand events long resigned to ancient history, then myth, then forgotten entirely. The frightful intelligence lurking behind them was unknowable and devious, Chris knew. He silently vowed not to be toyed with, to stand firm and come out the other side of this meeting still detached from this latest font of elfin machinations. Lillian tensed beside him as he lowered his head, but the motion brought Chris into a shallow bow rather than touching the offered hand to his lips. He knew enough to eschew any risk of arcane skullduggery. His last interaction with elven folk had left him wary, and he had no desire to get any closer to her pets.
Welcome, Matriarch Narlakis.
Thank you, it's my pleasure to provide passing entertainment to jaded old beings the world over.
The elf matriarch blinked, tasting his words for meaning before her lips quirked even wider.
Oh, I like this one, Rayla.
Vash turned to include her glowering daughter, her discontenting conveyance unerringly anticipating even that small movement.
The whelp has fangs. His fangs are blooded already, mother.
Test their sharpness at your peril.
Rayla spoke proudly, watching her dragon rather than her shamelessly provocative family member. She could see from the set of his shoulders and the slight flare of his nostrils that Chris was on guard. That pleased her greatly.
Lefade put forth a meddling hand and drew back a bloody stump for their trouble. It would be just dreadful if you came all this way only to suffer a similar fate.
Daughter, what a horrid.
Vash started theatrically, scolding first before she turned back to apologize with stage-worthy grace.
Please forgive her, Christopher. I do wonder that such a spiteful girl sprang from my own loins. She has certainly mastered the art.
Chris despaired as he saw Rayla's ear tips twitch in annoyance. These two could go around and around trading insults for centuries. In fact, he suspected that is exactly what had come to pass between mother and daughter.
If I have learned spitefulness, I must have received instruction somewhere.
Rayla snapped back, her gray eyes narrowing.
I am not the one who dash, enough.
Barked Lillian, fed up with being ignored as mother and daughter wound up for a spat. It was good that she was here to tell these two off before a certain dragon lost his patience.
You are both completely hopeless within a mile of each other.
Yes, yes, the sun will burn out and we'll all turn to dust before either of you consent to agree on anything.
We know. Let us at least get some food on the table so Chris can have something to do while you squabble over him.
That brought the feuding elves up short. Chris was both pleased and surprised by Lillian's approach, and took her example to heart.
Oh, very well then.
Bash consented, brushing aside the buxom vampire's scorn as if it meant nothing. She made to claim the head of the table, which would gall her daughter no end. Vash spoke over her shoulder as Siphon, her most faithful retainer, trotted to keep up with the heavily enchanted colony flowing across the floor.
Hello, Lillian, I see you've forsaken my daughter to cling to a brighter star.
How very predictable.
Jealous?
Lillian replied with genuine mirth, cocking her hip as she brushed a possessive hand up and down Chris's forearm.
Why, yes.
Chris found it hard not to chuckle. Rayla looked ready to erupt, bare moments from violent apoplexy. She caught his eye, glaring glass splinters up at him whilst in the background. Her mother fussed and complained to her servant about the seating, the cutlery, and the decor. Finally she mastered herself, spinning away to gesture forcefully to her own patiently waiting staff that they were ready to begin service. The evening that followed was more bizarre than Chris had imagined, and far more awkward. It was just cringe-worthy to be trapped in the front row, audience to a family enmity so carefully cultivated over the ages. He'd had the barest taste of such conflict before. Annabelle and her mother were both strong-willed women with clashing ideology. But these two had hundreds of years to really let their feelings simmer and develop flavor. However, the food was excellent, and that was no small consolation for putting up with the wheedling. Sniping exchange between the near-identical elves at either end of the great table.it might even be better than Annabelle's, though he'd never admit such a treacherous thought. Delicate, horrifically expensive fare had been shipped from all over the globe to pander to the great elfin matriarch, though none ever drew her praise. By the second course, a flight of enormous fresh oysters, deliciously seasoned inside their own shells, Chris was beginning to appreciate the merits of the multi-fork layout. The servers hadn't taken one away yet, which he determined meant that there were at least three more such delicious courses to look forward to. Chris mostly left mother and daughter to their own devices as they circled and snarled over his fate. Vash seemed to think she had some sort of hold over Rayla, and through her, the new wealth of magic crystal and economic clout he represented. Rayla was adamant that she was independent of any clan or familial obligation. She pointed out that this exact brand of meddling was the reason she had abandoned her mother's subterranean fiefdom and sought temporal power of her own long ago. She had no trouble recounting word for word the ridicule she'd endured from her family for that decision, despite the many centuries in between. Chris found it a fascinating insight into the minds of such ancient beings. In short, Rayla was firm that the dragon was hers, and her mother could politely keep her skeletal fingers out of the pie, unless she had something significant to offer in return. Her presumptive possessiveness irked him a little, but he realized that it was mostly symbolic. He couldn't exactly reject the notion if he also wanted to shelter under her political wing. Rayla was sort of like his defense attorney, and her mother was definitely worth having a barrier against. There was magical prodding going on too. Apparently Vash had been quietly researching Chris and his sudden appearance in the few days since she arrived. This issue had already come up during the soup course, pumpkin with fried garlic and pine nuts. Rayla was irked that her own mother had been wandering the compound offering her subjects rich bribes for juicy tidbits of the dragon's story. She was very curious about the night of the bathroom orgy, but Chris pleaded ignorance and blamed wild dragon magics, whatever that was. Now that they were in the same room, the witchy old elf didn't hesitate to magically examine him, attempting to satisfy her curiosity with various exploratory incantations even as she sparred verbally with her daughter. Chris held his magic bottle tight down in his gut, clearly frustrating Vash, who collected only small hints at his aura. He was pleased that he seemed to hold up under such experienced scrutiny. His practice of the habit must be paying off, and not a moment too soon. He really didn't need to be handing Rayla's mother any further hints about his questionable heritage or capabilities. Chris stayed taciturn, ignoring the probes, as that seemed to suit daughter and vex mother. He inevitably was coaxed to tell an abbreviated, censored version of his journey, his childhood in hiding, his tumultuous awakening as a dragon, and his efforts to date trying to find a place in the magical community. Vash was a shrewd, intelligent, and frightfully devious magical ruler, Chris knew. She wasn't buying that the magical happenings that seemed to crop up around him were innocent coincidence. She was fishing, and therefore he tried not to rise to her baiting, her insinuations, or her preposterous suggestions about how her daughter should be managing him. He let Rayla or Lillian respond for him whenever he could, stuck to his story, and heaped praise on the cooks with each new course. Chris didn't have to act delighted when he was served a huge sous vide steak accompanied by two broiled lobster tails. If Rayla's meddling mother left with the impression that he was a food-obsessed simpleton of uncommon magical potency, he would count that a victory. Chris swore he almost had her convinced when he snagged her barely touched portion as it was being cleared.
It should be illegal to waste lobster that good after all. But Vash was patient, tugging at frayed lies, switching tack on a dime, relentlessly belittling and provoking Rayla. Inevitably she found topics or twisted logic in ways that forced him to engage.
Daughter, he is practically knocking up anything that breathes with a skirt, and some that don't.
Vash complained with a haughty gesture toward Lillian.
His spawn will be powerful. Do you know what that means?
No.
Of course you don't.
Mother, I hardly dash. It means that once this pesky revelation has settled down, every faction, tribe, and ambitious swamp family with half-competent leadership is going to be clamoring at your door, desperate to negotiate their spare daughters into breeding contracts. As soon as it's clear his offspring inherit some measure of his power, which they will if I am any judge of such things, you will be forced to accede to such demands lest the Synod become involved.
That caught Chris' attention, and perhaps surprisingly, not in a good way.
Not going to happen. He rumbled, reluctantly lowering his third fork, precariously loaded with salad, seafood, sauce, and steak. He had to quash that terrifying line of thinking before it went any further.
Believe it or not, I'm just not that Randy. Besides, my brood is just getting settled. Silly boy, I'm not talking about love or affection.
The elf patronized, clever eyes widening with delight as she found a topic to engage the stubborn young dragon.
It's just business. You won't be given offers that can be lightly refused. Everyone will want a pretty little prodigy or two, all cute and ready to grow up and ship magic crystal just like their pea-headed papa.
No. Chris grunted, refusing to expound on any number of reasons that the frightful woman might twist against him.
What about other dragonesses?
Vash countered, suddenly the voice of reason.
That's different.
Is it? You've already favored a vampire. It's hardly fair to deprive the rest of the magical community when there is such pressing need for strong, fresh blood. And certainly not when ancient, proud dynasties are throwing piles of wealth at your feet for the privilege.
That would be an excellent way to turn a lot of very powerful people against you.
Tell him, daughter. To Chris' disbelief, Rayla nodded from the opposite end of the wooden expanse.
There will be significant pressure.
But that's crazy. Chris frowned, mulling the implications. He really didn't like the thought of passionless entanglements for political or financial gain. He'd been purposefully ignoring the possibility since his introduction to Petra and Claire had turned out so wonderfully. He just wouldn't feel right about bringing life into the world, but having little to do with his children. Worse, how could he trust their care and education to strangers if they did indeed share some shard of his cosmos-bending power? That seemed irresponsible in the extreme.
No. I wouldn't submit to that, political expediency be damned. I find it simply fascinating that you think you could resist.
Tell me more. Coaxed the millennia-old elf.
Really, it's quite unacceptable that my daughter hasn't seen fit to get a head start on the competition. Though she always was a bookish, prudish little thing. But never mind, name your price, dragon. If Rayla won't swallow her pride and open her legs, I could arrange for one of her sisters to dash, shut up you, despicable old weasel.
Rayla almost screeched as she shot up, hands balled into shaking fists.
My, someone is touchy.
Dash chortled, carefree as ever despite Rayla's murderous gaze. She calmly plucked a piece of crumbly cheese from her salad and dropped it onto the floor, eliciting a moment of excited chittering as her clamoring pets balled the morsel. Her daughter had always hated that habit.
You are at least exercising your prerogatives as his overlord, yes? Tell me, it must be simply effortless to cast magic with young Christopher as your source? So virile, so strong and tireless. If the stories I've heard are true, it must be like sitting beneath a never-ending magical waterfall. Why, you might just be the most potent sorceress alive. Who'd have thought, my very own daughter, I'm almost proud. What is she going on about?
Chris whispered to Lillian from the side of his mouth. But he wasn't quiet enough. Vash's long ears caught the furtive exchange.
What? Daughter, surely not.
We have not. Rayla almost growled the admission as she sat back down, knowing it would cost her somehow.
And that is enough on the subject, mother. Things have changed in the last century. Exercising some of the old practices is generally frowned upon now.
Frowned upon?
Frowned upon?
Vash was actually incredulous.
It is frowned upon to beat my servants, but I will do it nonetheless if they have earned it. Do you expect me to believe that you have this great big magical oaf under your thumb and aren't using him?
Hey. Chris protested half-heartedly.
The magical oaf is right here, you know. I don't believe it.
Daughter, you've gone soft. Vash hissed, completely ignoring the dragon as she cocked an accusing finger toward her wayward daughter.
Soft?
Rayla laughed maniacally at her mother's ignorance, though she kept an eye on that finger.
Try me, mother! I have grown while you lay stagnant in that filthy hovel, clinging desperately to past glories. Yet here you are, at my table, begging for my scraps. Forget that at your peril!
Vash Narlaki's ears twitched as her daughter's words sliced deep and true. Faithful Siphon tensed at her side, hands inching toward her worn sword hilts, ready to die for even a chance to answer such an insult. Vash sat stock still for several moments, livid, but in control. That's when she truly saw the dragon, or more accurately, she felt him. Just for a moment, no doubt thinking he was about to be in the middle of a vicious magical crossfire, he started reaching for his power. It was magnificent. He seemed to bulge outward against her senses, his aura pressing warm against her own.
Chris, no!
Rayla saw it too, and the dragon stopped, but she was too late. Vash was stunned, her daughter's insolence forgotten. Just a glimpse, but it provided such a vital perspective. Things began locking into place. Hints and facts she'd collected and discarded as exaggeration were examined in a new light. Her daughter's absurd behavior, the crystals.
the crystals. Mental cogs jammed, then began churning like mad. She felt strange. Excitement, even fear flooded to the very root of her ancient bones. With a victorious smile, Vashnarlaki stood, any thoughts of finishing out the meal abandoned. She had to think, and this was not the pace for it, not over such a monumental discovery. A subtle twist of the faceted gem in her left index finger, and the hive snapped back into fluid cohesion, responding to her inaudible siren's call. She strode purposefully for the door, rising and quickening as she was borne along. The dragon was watching, Vash realized, huge, steadfast, and far too innocent to wield such power. She slowed slightly, unsure what to say but knowing she couldn't just leave.
My apologies, dragon. I have been terribly rude this evening, forgive my foolishness.
Chris glanced to Lillian, who only shrugged. She too seemed shocked by the sudden turn as the elf and her bodyguard swept by on the other side of the table.
Scraps indeed.
Vash murmured vindicatively as she brushed close to her stony-faced daughter. She would never admit it, but Rayla was the best of all her many children. The most potent, independent, the brightest, and after today, certainly the most ambitious. It was deliciously scandalous and terribly obvious in hindsight, her daughter's wicked secret. Now Vash had her impetuous daughter by the short hair. Rayla seriously considered matricide in the moments before the doors closed. It would be messy, but her secret would be safe a little while longer. But the deep thump of their shuddering tolled like a funeral bell in her mind, and the possibility faded with the moment. She put her face in her hands, biting down hard on the meat of her palm lest she scream. Control, it might be salvaged if she somehow regained control.
Well, that was weird, strange lady.
Rayla, you planning on finishing those potatoes?
It had been a chill night in the mountains, and the small herd of deer had sheltered in an overgrown gully higher up the slope. By the gray light of earliest morning their cautious leader, a proven buck of 6 summers, forged them a path down the rocky, pine-smattering slope. The does and youngsters followed, ever alert for foreign scents, shying away from the growing patches of snow and ice where they could. Warm breath misted the freezing air, and all were on guard as they approached the rushing, white water stream and its dangerous, distracting melody. A smart predator might use the noise to cover its approach. Flowing water was a luxury to savor before the creeks and streams iced over more completely, then there would only be snow to nibble. The boulders and rough banks at the water's edge were already collecting drifts up to their bellies, slick and treacherous with ice from the constant splashes of the torrent's rapid descent. The small herd took turns to lower their heads, gorging themselves for the whole day. The buck caught the odd noise in a fraction of a second, they all did. He coughed a harsh warning to his family, urging them to scatter as the echoing crack of magically rented air bounced wildly up the secluded valley. They should have been safe to winter here. It had been safe for many seasons, and humans almost never strayed this far into the mountains in the cold months. A huge commotion reached the deer's sensitive ears from downstream, protesting rock, splashing water, and splintering deadwood. There was a powerful new scent on the breeze. It was a fearful scent, stirring ancestral terror with its distinctive, spicy musk. Something gripped the buck, instinct mixed with fear and exhilaration. His foot stomped in the muddy snow, he barked a final command as his does hooves clattered away over the scree and larger rocks. The old herd leader sensed that this was his moment, time to run the gauntlet. His strength, agility, and endurance would win his survival, or it would not. Either outcome would see the danger away from his mates and their offspring as he led the new threat on a merry chase. The deer snorted, and charged downstream. Not a complete fool, the buck chose a tangential course that would eventually take him back up toward the safety of the ridges and the forested valley beyond. He couldn't see the beasts, but he could hear their great voices rumbling, hear their slithering bodies in the stream as he raced past at his closest approach. His heart pounded, breath streaming as he ran. A deep, thrumming rhythm, a moment of immense movement in the corner of his eye, fear, and a vivid flash of lightning. Petra banked expertly, flaring hard as her inside wingtip brushed scant meters over a stand of naked birch trees near the edge of the waterway. Chris wondered at her self-confidence to pull off such a demanding turn in the confined valley. He wouldn't have dared to try anything except to flap laboriously in place. With a few more beats of her oversized wings, and precise deployment of her tail as counterbalance, the slender dragoness reversed course on a dime. Her strafing run was a success, and she dropped from the air onto the steaming carcass as it tumbled down the slope. Her neck darted forward, and her silver muzzle came up red. Claire made a chirping noise beside him, head low and bobbing as she churned her stockier body up slope over meter-tall rocks, edging toward her mother's kill. There was a minor scuffle, a few half-hearted roars, as the kill was contested. A mouthful of petrostatic charge kept her greedy daughter away from the choicest organ meat. She might have shared that with her mate, but he was not to be distracted. Already Chris powered his huge purple bulk upstream, hunting in his own way. If that man and deer hadn't raced right under their noses, Petra would be at his side. But it was fascinating to watch her mate work, his angular snout held low, tongue flicking in and out. He was a brute to behold, scaled forelegs like mighty purple tree trunks, a thick, swishing tail to batter his rivals into submission. She was built to fly. He was built to plow all in his path aside, with flight as an afterthought. Her own mother would have called him a swamp dragon, her catch-all derogatory for any of their species born without the slender mountain form so suited to the wing. But her mother, may she rest forever peacefully, would have struggled to find fault with this magnificent male. Petra saw the moment when he caught wind of his prize, their promised reward. She watched as he tasted the water, paused, then nearly stampeded up the freezing channel, leaving the icy, crystal waters muddy in his wake. Claire used her mother's distraction to gobble down the buck's hindquarters, but Petra was entranced by the promise of gold,
already stretching her wings to join her mate. The load was just where Chris remembered, but his perspective was now much different. He'd feared that someone might accidentally discover it while he was occupied with building their new home, on top of his other distractions. But his sense for that most precious metal was true, and heightened as a full dragon. It told him the deposit was safe and undisturbed since his last visit with Michelle. In a slight bend in the gushing meltwater stream, the tip of a large granite outcropping defied the tumbling water. A pool had formed beside it due to the turbulence caused by its immovability, though it filled and emptied with loose rocks from flood to flood. Upstream, water crashed against the defiant facade, worn smooth over untold years. But slowly, water plied its inevitable force, seeping into cracks, freezing, expanding, thawing, carrying away the stone one molecule at a time if necessary. Below the surface, a good distance into the side of the mountain, that outcrop hid a precious secret. In a natural seam, a geological junction of matter and force, a rich deposit of gold-laden quartz formed a thick fissure between layers of the surrounding stone. It had likely formed there eons ago, by slow filtration of hot, mineral-rich volcanic water. Now, the waters of the stream very slowly worked down minute fissures toward the gold, seeping away slightly enriched. A sensitive young dragon with such a lust for the substance, that trail of dissolved ions was a natural draw. He followed it by instinct, as well as he would track any prey, tasting his way ever closer with his split tongue. Once he was nearby, he could sense it even through the solid rock. Gold felt heavy and comforting in his greater magical awareness. It was warm, as if harmonizing with some vibration of his own. He'd always had a strong resonance to gold, even for a dragon, and he'd felt this deposit twice before. He dabbled in the pool, assessing the outcrop from every angle, examining, crawling up and over the rock as his excited mates watched nearby, tails lashing. Folk wisdom said that the best dragon gold was formed by the dragon's toil, by the excitement and emotion of clawing it from the earth by talon, tooth, and fire alone. So Chris was hesitant to involve too much magic in the process, lest it ruin the growth of his rapport with the metal. He didn't know for sure if that was true, but he wasn't willing to risk it, not without seeing what three dragons could accomplish first. They began by exposing the outcropping, clearing the surrounding area of loose rocks, soil, and debris. It was messy, and the stream soon ran brown with dislodged silt. They filled the pool, one tumbling boulder and kicking rear leg at a time. Petra worked to divert a portion of the stream so it wouldn't interfere. That alone took several hours, and their scales were dulled with mud long before the sun rose into the valley to set their colorful armor glinting. Petra was a little dainty about the work, so she was tasked with the lighter, but no less important tasks. She was their lookout, assistant, and worked to help clear the leavings of the other two's digging. Claire was like a hog in mud. Once Chris explained his plan of attack, and helped her recognize the faint feeling of the gold hidden behind tons of rock, she had to be restrained if anything. Broader of body, and more heavily muscled than her mother, she began clawing around the top of the outcrop like a manic terrier dismantling a rabbit's den. Her fire was amazing. Chris soon realized it was going to be their key to unlocking the treasure trove. She could actually melt rock with a sustained blast, and the thermal shock of her sparky gouts could shatter or loosen troublesome boulders in the freezing soil. Chris dug and dug. He dug blindly into the muddy remnants of the pool, clawing and sometimes even biting anything that might support the huge slab of rock when they eventually made their play to topple it. He did the brunt of the dirtiest, hardest lifting. His white talons widened fissures, then he yanked backward, sometimes pulling away hundreds of pounds of dirt and stone at a time. His own jets of vivid plasma were useful to dry slippery rocks or widen grips, but they didn't have the kick of Claire's roaring inferno. It was late afternoon before they even exposed the vital fissure that led down to the lode. Petra had caught them several more deer and two mountain goats to fuel their labor. A tired but positive attitude was shared between the trio as they surveyed the diverted water and the huge plateau of their tailings below the now denuded outcropping. It was tempting to see if Claire could melt her way straight down to the gold, but Chris knew that wouldn't really help them get it out. Instead, he directed her to begin gouging and melting shallow holes at intervals along the top of the exposed fissure. He began working on the vital fissure at the side of the huge chunk. Petra, meanwhile, got a crash course in amateur lumbering. She eventually figured out how to fell a few unlucky fir trees, roughly trimmed them, and began dragging them proudly down to the worksite. She hurt one of her hind legs on the treacherous footing, but the injury was thankfully minor. Slipping and sliding on the churned-up mountainside, pieces of log were snapped, sworn at, burnt, and even pulverized as the dragons hoisted them upright, then wedged them into the prepared depressions along the top of the crack that housed the load. It was a painstaking, slow process. Logs had to be thinned, shortened, and sometimes discarded. The holes had to be widened, and the pivotal one on the side was deepened substantially when it was realized it wouldn't adequately bite the selected log on its own. The sun had set again, and Claire was all out of fire before everything was in place to Chris' satisfaction. Everyone was exhausted and cold. He was very tempted to give in and use one of his orbs to gouge out chunks of the offending outcropping until it was a fine rubble. Draconic stubbornness wouldn't allow him to admit defeat until his plan had failed more thoroughly, and besides, the gold below practically shouted to his senses now. Petra could barely contain herself, dogging his footsteps impatiently, nipping friskily at his haunches. Finally they were ready, and the first true blows were struck in earnest. Chris' tail slammed down on the log with tremendous force, driving it fractionally deeper as painful ripples shot up his body. The end of his tail was mostly hardened bone, and spiked for combat. Besides him, Claire used her battered forepaws, raising her entire body high on her hindquarters before punching down on her log with pulverizing force. Petra heaved and pushed on the fulcrum point below.
She even attempted a few shoulder charges down a hastily constructed ramp before that was decided to be better suited to those with thicker skulls and emptier tummies. It was bone-jarring work, even for dragons. Several log sections along the top gave out, snapped, or just started falling apart. But it was working. They were slowly creating pressure, wedging the rock apart along natural lines of stress and weakness. One particular blow finally widened the fissure by almost an inch. With a tortured groan, the very mountainside seemed to tremble beneath them, and the air was suddenly laden with the metallic tang of their prize. Once things settled, Chris was quick to encourage his mates into another round of repositioning and trunk pounding, taking up the extra space they had won, building pressure all over again. It seemed achievable now. And once the fissure was again wedged as tightly as their increasingly tender muscles would allow, all three dragons went below. In the darkness and mud and rubble, they heaved and strained in unison. Their legs churned, pushing on the end of the biggest, longest log they could find to fit in the confined stream bed. Over half of Chris Earthworks had been to allow the creation of this lever. Braced against the mountain, with the might of three dragons and Archimedes himself arrayed against it, the rock finally split. Dragons scampered like frightened kittens when it toppled, snorting and chirping triumphantly. It creaked as the lever gave, then slid suddenly. The outcrop seemed to hold for a moment before crashing down onto the muddy water with a tremendous slap. They would have been fine where they were, but the sane reaction was to get the hell out of the way, dragon or not. Claire roared down at it from the top of their temporary dam. Chris slithered excitedly back to the sheared face as soon as things settled. Petra and Claire were right beside him, pushing in their eagerness. Between the end of the huge, displaced rock chunk, amongst their logs now scattered about like toothpicks, their prize glittered in the starlight. It was indeed a large seam of gold-bearing quartz, a mixture of ruddy metal and whitish stone. Heavy on the gold, light on the quartz too, if he was any judge. Impatient for her turn to gawk in the limited space, Claire set fire to the tumble of broken logs, and the true extent of their illicit excavation was laid bare. Petra actually gasped, a rather strange expression on a dragon. There was a lot of gold, hundreds and hundreds of kilograms. There could be more, depending on how deep the vein ran, and its purity. Chris shuffled forward, leaning through the harmless flame to rest his forehead against the precious substance. There was a reason they were drained. There, in the gold, was magical potential. Waiting, energy absorbed during the day as he and Claire and Petra plied their mighty bodies toward its liberation, it resonated back at them now. He pushed, and his magic poured effortlessly inside, finding the most welcoming of homes between the matrix of its malleable atomic structure. Transfer was seamless. There was no resistance or loss, no fighting his intent. It wasn't anything to do with his unique ether abilities, or his godlike patron, Chris realized. This wonder, this miracle of magic was all dragon, the wild magic of their species. With it alone, he might change the world. Chris shrank back, letting Petra and Claire have their turn to nuzzle at the vein like catnip. He was stunned, floored not only that they had triumphed in their base, muddy efforts, but at the possibilities now opening to him. There was plenty of work still to do, experiments, prototypes to build and test. It was incredible. With Imi, he might make an army's worth of near-invincible armor, or fantastic magical constructs. With Haley, he might revolutionize the energy market, space exploration, and who knew what else. With Rayla, he might do any number of things, including creating weapons of terrible potency, or unleash magics not seen for thousands of years. With Claire and Petra, he would make a family, and redouble their crystal production. That at least would be a humble start, and one free of guilt. Yes, Chris decided more forcefully, conviction reaffirmed. For despite the wonders this new trove of dragon gold foreshadowed, he would have to live with the consequences of his scheming and inventing. Previously ideas, these things were now possibilities, and soon to be realities. There was one less step to take, and correspondingly, that much less room to turn back. Once the big chunks of gold-imbued quartz were pried loose and transported back to Denver by Orb, the dragonesses found use for the old warehouse disguising their new underground home. His mates worked on and off for days to crush the rock and separate the magically imbued metal. It was quite the spectacle, two dragons crunching stone under their giant paws. Their swelling tummies were starting to scrape as they lumbered about on the big concrete floor, and Chris found that intensely adorable. Kyle came by to help the process at Chris' invitation, a little overawed by the honor. The rest of the brood looked on in detached fascination for days, and there were plenty of good-natured eye-rolls about treasure-obsessed dragons. It took the dwarven smith time to warm up, and he tread as lightly as a mouse around two hungry cats while Petra and Claire were at work. He ended up reassembling his own furnace on site to help melt and process impurities from the metal, which saved Claire burning the warehouse down with her own attempts. He absolutely refused the idea to have it transported to his shop, and rightly so for security reasons. But not only did he sift and smelt out the gold, Kyle employed advanced metallurgical techniques to wring every ounce of gold from the tailings. Watching him gave Chris a broader appreciation of Rayla's efforts to collect useful pieces for her magical kingdom. He himself wouldn't have the confidence or expertise to handle mercury and caustic agents, let alone know how to acquire, store, or dispose of them responsibly. Expertise was a type of power all of its own, and Chris was realizing that he must transition his mindset if he was going to play on the same stage as the magical, or even mundane elite. Beyond the more obvious tropes, wealth, institutional power, knowledge, trade, or even magic, the capability to do things like process gold from rock was, in its way, a type of power. Rayla liked to tie useful people to her purpose. Indeed, that was the essence of the magical microcosm hiding under the city. Chris appreciated the ways that he was slowly being tied into the elf's web too. It wasn't necessarily a bad thing, but more and more of her growing power was riding on his shoulders.
He shouldn't lightly forget that. Lillian had benefited from her blood pact by the equivalent of several centuries. Rayla had helped and trained her telekinesis too. If that relationship had soured over the centuries, it had still been mutually beneficial. They even seemed more cordial these days, now that Rayla's vice-like hold on the vampire had loosened and some of their dirty laundry had aired. But would he be content to be part of someone else's web? Could he be content as a piece on her board rather than a true player? Chris wasn't sure, but he felt the elf's strings pulling tighter around him. Especially after her latest rescue and that downright strange dinner with her mother, there was a seductive comfort in following orders, in having a defined purpose and letting someone else guide his course. He sort of liked that about his work with Michelle and her team. There was plenty of leeway, but he was ultimately following someone else's lead. Without Rayla's sheltering wing, he would be loaded with added stresses and responsibilities. The magical community was so tiny, living outside of her authority would almost be like stepping outside of civilization and all its nice trappings. Sure, other powerful figures would climb over each other to extend the dragon and his brood their welcome, but that new hand would come with its own conditions. He had to consider these ideas, because with this gold, he was going to attempt things that would compromise any illusion that Rayla truly had him under her thumb. She'd nearly begged him to lay low for the Synod, to keep his head down for a few decades and let the existing powers of the being hierarchy adjust to his sudden appearance in their midst. She feared the consequences of exposing his secret, or the extent of his abilities. Yet he was starting to realize that there would be a whole other boatload of consequences, just by following her advice. Other things worried him above and beyond upset fairies and dynasty-obsessed elves. He had an asshole of a celestial patron breathing down his neck at any moment. There was that nagging sense again, that he was going to have to be the one to step up and deal with Roddick. Personally, at some point, there wouldn't be any hiding his unique powers. Being dishonest about his origins in the meantime, even by omission, might be worse in the long run, he just didn't know. No doubt Rayla would say he was being terribly naive, but he wanted to be honest. As Chris watched a batch of their magically potent rough gold being prepared for processing, he was forced to confront these disconcerting options. He had power, immense power. He could do incredible, even terrible things if he marshaled his resources and his resolve. But should he, and what gave him the right? He had to talk to Rayla, after this first experiment anyway. What's got you so moody? Petra laced her silver-scaled fingers over his as she embraced him from behind. In her half-dragon form, she was fresh from sweeping up the pounded quartz under Claire's paws and running it through a small sluice box they had purchased for the task. Her hands were icy, and she tortured him mercilessly by running her clawed fingers carefully across his tummy until he was squirming, breathless, and grinning. With her as half-dragon in baggy overalls, and him as a mere bulky human in clothes he didn't want to ruin, he was entirely at her mercy. He also knew better than to escalate with a playful dragoness unless he was committed. After a mentally punishing afternoon in the library, he wasn't prepared to start a Godzilla-style brawl in the cold, industrial backstreets of Denver. Taxpayer-funded magical protections or not, that didn't count as laying low in anyone's books. Mercy, please. He wheezed, catching her offending digits and trying to hold them still. I was just being gloomy about all the trouble I'm likely to cause if I actually do anything groundbreaking with this gold. That seemed to sober his mate, because she was thoughtful for long moments as they watched the powerfully built dwarf tinker with his furnace and molding tools whilst muttering about his latest beard singe. Well, I know Haley is mad to get her hands on some. I don't pretend to understand everything she has planned with you, but I specifically recall a promise about a bed made of gold. Who's going to complain about that? Who'd ever know unless you told them? You have a point there. Chris rumbled, feeling his mood lightening just by confiding in his lover. And I did promise something special for the grotto, didn't I? Actually, I was just thinking the same thing earlier today. It will be an excellent first try. I'm excited to see how our magical harmony with the stuff will allow us to exert control over it. I've been researching all sorts of spells to alter just fundamental things like physical properties. Adhesion, malleability, hardness, conductivity. It's sexy when you get all intent on something. The dragonesses huffed, moving to stand in front of him but doing so without releasing her embrace. He was warm from his walk home though, and she enjoyed his close warmth. Go on. Okay. Gold is really heavy, right? Therefore we don't have that much by volume. I'm hoping we can form some sort of semi-fluid aggregate to make up for that, with the right magical prodding that is. Diamond is the obvious candidate. It's an adequate magical reservoir, it's really hard. And best of all, I can make the stuff by the truckload with my spooky powers. Petra was clearly intrigued by the idea, but a cute frown creased her forehead even as her nostrils flared with treasure-induced arousal. You want to make me a magical concrete bed of gold and diamonds? Don't get me wrong, it's bold, it's crazy, I like it. But why? Couldn't I just have a great big pile of it all instead? That sounds much easier. I could lie on top of it and run my fingers through it. All valid to the discerning dragoness, I'm sure. However, we're after emergent properties, my dear. Chris coaxed with a chuckle. His hands were naturally straying toward her sumptuous hips. He couldn't help thinking about what they would be doing on this theoretical lump of a bed. If we can make this work the way I envision, it will provide a far superior, if indirect, method of transferring magic into gemstones. We'll exploit the connection to our gold. It will act as a conduit, and a reservoir. The diamonds will ultimately be extruded and sold, at a reasonable markup. Perhaps we replace them in batches? I'm not sure. There's potentially so much more it could do, too. I have an idea for a magical drill, actually. Besides, it'll be softer than a pile of gold bars when I'm nailing your sweet ass to it.
I do like that last one. But you want to make gold soft?
If anything, her frown had grown, but her subtly swaying hips and restless wings gave Petra's lusty nature away. She touched the gold pendant at her neck.
That all sounds intriguing, and we could use any help with the backlog of crystals. Soft, hot, bouncy, self-sustaining golden fluffy handcuffs, I'll do it all. I want to play with it like Play-Doh, Petra.
Magic it's. I need to see what I can do. Chris tried to convey his desire to push some boundaries, to make his magical mark beyond his established reputation as a magical golden goose. He wanted to see what was possible just for the sake of knowing, and the chance of discovering something incredible.
This is probably blasphemous, so don't tell any strange dragons or it will kill my good reputation, but there's no point in having all this wonderful gold, this wealth, if we don't do anything productive with it. Our connection is just so intrinsic. The potential magical uses are mind-blowing when you start to think about it. Actually, I can't believe I ever sold any to Rayla. That was pretty dumb even if I did need the cash at the time. I adore your enthusiasm, my love.
Petra kissed his chin, looking up at him with earnest devotion.
I was born a long time ago, in a less enlightened era. I know that's no excuse for ignorance, but in a way I'm still a simple dragon with simple desires, a simple woman if there is any such thing.
Chris shook his head in denial at that, but she placed a finger on his lips and continued.
I don't understand the greater implications of making gold soft, bouncy, and especially not neutron absorbent. But I'm glad you do, Chris, and I'm glad you're passionate. So build me a fancy, world-bending golden bed, and experiment to your heart's content.
Responsibly. She added the caveat with a knowing smile.
I think that's incredible, but I'll leave it to you and Haley. I'm old, I fully intend to enjoy my simpler life and focus on raising our children.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Chris nodded. I admire you for it, actually.
Good. Just stay off the evening news with your experiments this time, please.
I'll try.
Chris winced apologetically at the memory of the fateful moon incident. Hey, want to find out how a hidebound dwarf journeyman reacts to us making a mere bed out of invaluable dragon gold? I think he might finally lose it with me.
That would be fun.
I feel terrible, but he's almost cute. He jumps like a little bunny when my paws come close. Of course, it's a different story when they're heavily armored and arrayed against you in well-disciplined shield ranks. They fight like little devils and they're brave.
The voice of experience? Chris asked as they broke their embrace, his eyebrows cocked in mild surprise.
A bit. Petra admitted. When I was just a girl, younger than Claire is now. The moral of the story is, their armor conducts, so they roast like popcorn against my lighting. However, their scorpion platforms hurt, and they're fast. They've probably got their hands on guns now.
That's interesting.
After hearing about Rayla in action, I'm starting to appreciate the brutality of magical wars in our past. Long life seems a daunting prospect in some ways. In truth, there haven't been any magical conflicts besides a few skirmishes since before I was born.
Petra admitted, softening her voice as they approached Kyle and the radiating heat of his efforts.
Don't tell him about it, okay?
It's not polite.
Chris nodded, then raised his voice to call out to both the smith and the ruby dragoness clawing and crushing the last of their captured load further down the floor.
Guys, come over please. I've just come from Rayla's library and I think we're ready to try something a little crazy.
You dragons leave me out of the scheme.
Kyle looked up, removing his goggles and squinting his eyes open and closed a few times as he approached. He had a terrible case of raccoon rings.
Claire scampered over too, curling her tail under the gas-powered forge to bask in its warmth.
It's time you got a lesson in how dragons forge.
Chris blustered good-natured, watching the dwarf shake his head in resignation.
Don't worry, I took your advice about simplicity to heart. This will be interesting, but no component is groundbreaking.
Oh, there's nothing groundbreaking about almost half a ton of weapons-grade gold in the hands of a Balza, headstrong young dragon, nothing at all.
The pearly, wide smile emerging from the smith's beard told Chris that the dwarf was game, despite his pessimism.
This might earn my name a place on the Great Spire. Though it's good odds for the seventh face, the face for remembering our great idiots. I reserve the right to say I told you so. A favorite saying of dwarves.
Petra smirked.
Aye, because we're usually right.
Chris was already working on the parameters of the ether orb he would use. Every school of magic had its limitations and shortcomings, especially for a rank amateur like himself. Incantations, for example, were almost always short-lived unless they were cast specifically on an object with a dedicated source. Tied to the propagation of sound, the practitioner's voice, their intention, was manifested through the tool of language. Incantation was a good choice to cast broad-ranging spells on relatively short notice. However, they took a good chunk of focus to pull off, and they could be interrupted in a number of ways. Runes were just slow. Excellent longevity, but very focused on craft and preparation rather than in-the-moment casting. As Chris had discovered, complexity had its pitfalls too. Imi's prototype devices guzzled magic just monitoring the immediate surroundings for magical threats. Dragon Gold was special, and he was finally playing to his strengths. In theory, almost anything at all could be done with magic. It is said to be the power of creation itself. A rock that floats, a duck that sinks, or an ever-filling pizza box.
With the right spell, runes, or even a powerfully focused thought, these were all possible. The drawback was the cost. Those fresh pizzas had to come from somewhere. Newton had a thing or two to say about that rock, and he charged by the plank.
Good luck to anyone trying to form the pizza from scratch rather than magically stealing it from the warmer of the nearest pizza joint.
Good. Practical magic is about finding the most inventive, cheapest way of accomplishing the goal with minimal compromises. People are frugal when they're using a truly precious resource. To dragons, their gold was a magical sponge and putty in one. Chris suspected that once he put in a little work to unlock its secrets, it might hold his magical impressions almost indefinitely. It had its own magical field, and it was highly conductive, magically speaking. It vacuumed up excess arcane energy in the presence of dragons, and would bleed it off very slowly by remarkable self-replication. His spells should stick to it like superglue. As long as he was only modifying, not creating or destroying anything, any magic cast on the gold itself should be extremely efficient. Like electricity in a superconductor, Chris thought excitedly. He tested the theory by picking up a still warm ounce bar from Kyle's trolley. As always, it was satisfyingly heavy, and a shiver of magical recognition ran up his spine on contact, nibbling his nerves. It glinted richly, even though the light outside was fading into evening. Indeed, the gold was calling out to be put to use. Chris centered his thoughts inward, gathering focus, blanking out everything except himself and that wonderfully hefty golden rectangle. A modest trickle of power, and his intent surged toward the metal structure inside. His mind quested, searching with singular desire. Bounce. The request was met with parade day enthusiasm. Chris just knew that the bar would comply like the finest India rubber, but continued his contact and deepened his immersion. He didn't think the atoms of gold themselves would change, but there must be subtle shifts in the way they aligned. Rather, the energy he spent created new magically defined patterns of memory and least resistance, almost like artificial polymers. Chris took a moment to appreciate the bizarre potential of magic applied at the smallest physical scales. He had been thinking on the topic for weeks. Mundane and magical research now paid off, for with a deeper understanding, manipulation at an atomic level seemed almost basic. The positively charged metal lattice had just obeyed his will, and their dissociated electrons followed because they had little choice to do otherwise. It was simply incredible. If not groundbreaking, then to an amateur like himself, certainly mind-opening. The spell he'd been inspired by professed to absorb kinetic energy with profound efficiency, rebounding it almost violently in proportion. It cost. Indeed, it might have been prohibitive with a rock or a lump of iron. Dragon-infused gold, however, leapt toward his desire, and held his mental construct almost effortlessly. Chris smiled as he withdrew, opening his eyes again to see the others watching him expectantly. In his fingers, the small gold block gave under a little squeeze, almost squirming. It was much firmer than a ball of rubber bands, but it did squish slightly and spring back in a decidedly non-metallic fashion. So, the books he'd poured over in Rayla's library were correct, even though he'd used intention rather than incantation. There really wasn't much power in the spell at all, by his standards at least. When he dropped it, eliciting a startled response, the deceptively heavy bar jolted back into the air like a coiled spring set free. He felt like whooping, then laughed aloud as the gold skittered off at an odd angle to the concrete floor. The damn thing wasn't rounded at all. Claire nearly toppled them all as her angular, ruby-scaled head darted forward to snap at it. But the second bounce was even crazier than the first, and the momentum was being conserved nicely. Her jaws clacked loudly on empty air, scant centimeters off her elusive target. She chased after it delightedly, completely heedless with wings half raised, batting at the shiny thing down the length of the warehouse. Chris was grinning like a fool, watching her pregnant belly scrape the floor as she chittered a dragon's joyous laugh. Kyle rubbed at his eyes in humorous resignation. "I think we'll keep that one for the kids," Petra observed with newfound fascination. The dragoness fished out her own heavy pendant, examining it with new respect. "Could you make it powerfully charged, electricity-wise? I don't see why not, at least in theory. Though that does sound sort of dangerous," Chris ventured. "Dragons?" The dwarf muttered under his breath, looking almost paternally at the stack of ingots he'd lovingly labored over. Their fate wasn't his own to choose, but clearly he disapproved of them being squandered on whimsy. "Have a little faith, that was just a wee trial run," Chris teased, summoning a large ether orb into existence above them with a dramatic unfurling of his hand. It loomed, dark and sinistrous, about a meter and a half wide. "See this bubble? I've told it to hold only gold for now, it's quite safe otherwise. If you please toss about half of the bars in there while I go collect the diamonds, we'll get down to something really interesting." Chris headed downstairs as Claire began loping back to see what they were doing. Petra looked about, and seeing that no one else would dare, began chucking gold distrustfully at the devouring magical sphere. Her precious treasure vanished wherever it touched the geometrically perfect black surface, and somehow, it didn't fall back down. Kyle watched from the sidelines with arms crossed, then with a gruff rumble, turned to close up his forge for the day. Immy dogged his heels from the kitchen as Chris went first to change into something more practical. He was about to do some dragon work, so he only put on loose, comfortable clothes and some woolly slippers Annabelle insisted on buying for him. He protested their purchase, but secretly loved the things, especially for getting up to pee in the night. He felt casually confident, buoyed by his initial proof of concept. The diamond manufactory had been moved out of the grotto the very day after they moved in. That was for the best, because it was now much expanded in a corner of the large communal area at the start of the two-bedroom hallways. The space was still undecided, and now that construction was finished, it was a much better place for the task. Neat heaps of uncut gemstones glittered duly below a cubic array of his tiny black orbs. They now produced thousands of sand-like diamond granules whenever he cycled them. A range of larger sizes were being produced too, up to about the dimensions of a small hen's egg, with several grades in between. With neat mounds of near-worthless carbon piled up like that, the corner of the large room looked a little like the landscaping supply yard that had taken all the crushed rock from excavating the house. Completely out of place beside the various piles of cardboard boxes, packaging, and other moving flotsam that had naturally, though hopefully temporarily, encroached on the unclaimed area. At a loss for a better idea how to get them upstairs, Chris retrieved hand brushes and dust shovels from the utility closet. He and Immy set to scooping them up into a series of mid-sized orbs, which were then guided carefully back through the house in convoy, the sprite prancing in the lead. That potential utility alone boggled Chris, and he reminded himself to experiment more thoroughly with just his transportation capacity. It was going to be critical to know how much he could carry, and how quickly it tired him. Dragon, sprite, and bobbing extra-dimensional spheres must have made a strange procession, because Michelle and Annabelle couldn't resist following them back out through the draconic entrance. They put on warm coats and headed upstairs to see what all the hubbub was for. Chris stripped, transformed, and made the main orb somewhat transparent so the others could see. Only he had the true, unerring sense of everything that went on inside. His audience didn't feel the absence of air, or the teeming billions of heavy nuclei and fuzzy electrons. As he prepared himself to focus and cast magic once again, he made a few more adjustments, groundwork for the addition of gemstones. This would be the most demanding use of one of his orbs since his qualified success with Haley, and so he planned carefully and double-checked his desired parameters for safety and solidity of logic and purpose. He was tempted to send the others away in case there was a mishap, but he suspected his brewmates would balk. That was quite comforting in a way. Satisfied, the diamonds were dumped unceremoniously in with the gold from above. Once again, the orb's slightly distorted outline allowed passage inward but then perfectly contained, allowing everything outward across its membrane excepting carbon and gold. Only light was enabled to travel in both directions at the moment. The hoarded diamonds bolstered a much larger pile on the bottom of the sphere so that barely a trace of the gold was visible, even though there was a pharaoh's ransom worth of the precious stuff inside. With a swollen audience, three dragons, fire red, cloud silver, and royal purple, unleashed their combined breath at the main orb. With three violent torrents spewing heat and magic inside, the gold soon softened. Immy clapped excitedly as Chris padded forward to adjust the main orb once more. It wasn't quite right, so he ordered that it roll very slowly. The glittering pile clung high on the rising side, then slumped in a rush and began to mix and tumble. Satisfied that the immense heat was absorbing more evenly, Chris resumed his vivid plasma breath. In his mind's eye, diamonds sparkled, churning like a choppy sea. Gold bars glimmered, rich and almost red as they surfaced, only to subsume moments later as undeniable mass dragged them back down toward the bottom. He intimately experienced the first molten trickles of liquid gold, molecules too excited to maintain true cohesion with the larger metallic lattice. They touched cooler diamonds, hardening instantly back into a messy clump. Then, like chocolate in a water bath, the rest started to liquefy all at once. Petra's actinic breath gave out, providing a gap in the near-blinding flow of dragon fire. Michelle exclaimed, and the others rushed to reposition, watching molten gold begin to churn and splatter goopily as it ran down the rolling sides of its otherworldly container. Chris sensed the excited vibrations of the atoms inside. They had poured in an immense deluge of heat. Under natural circumstances it would probably take days to cool. He stopped his own breath and Claire followed suit a few moments later. Everyone watched as more gold became liquid and the mixture began to settle into a clumpy roll, much like a batch of fresh concrete. In minutes, and with a few more blasts from the weary dragons, it was mixed thoroughly. A thick, sludgy aggregate of diamonds suspended and lubricated in molten gold. His spells were simple, and yet profound when blessed with a conduit so excellent as dragon gold. First he imprinted a moderate magical attraction between the gold and everything it was currently touching. That was only diamond, for the orb had all but evacuated itself of everything else under the heat and pressure. But the effect of that first magic was instant and dramatic. The rich mixture stood up, taking on a new texture inside its container. Suddenly it was behaving more like a glutinous dough than a hot pile of rocks with expensive sauce drizzled on top. It tumbled up the side of the orb in a cohesive blob, then fell to the bottom and began rolling around and around. He would fiddle with the exact strength of that binding later. It didn't have to be exact for now. Piggybacked on that magical impression, Chris refocused and added that the gold should very gently repel everything else. He didn't want something or someone falling in, never to surface. That would hopefully prevent him being poked by the tines of one of Claire's errant phone chargers. The woman had many and they tended to be continually lost, then found again in wholly improbable places. Chris paid close attention as the spell took, trickling magic in over long minutes, maintaining as single-minded a focus as he could. He slowed the orb's roll, and as before, gave the gold a magical bounce factor. The diamond aggregate would actively work against that, so he made it quite strong for now. There were bright flashes and actinic sparks as the spell propagated, delighting his audience. Whole fistfuls of the golden clump shattered off, crashing violently against the walls of its prison. There were magical imbalances, but after a sort of hierarchical shift where Chris put the new spell at higher precedence over the others, it gradually settled. Chris doubted he could have pulled this idea off without his ether orb. Not only did it eliminate the need for an industrial-sized crucible, it gave him complete awareness of what was going on inside. It was beautiful. He could feel exactly how the gold pulled together, how the progressively smaller diamonds flowed over and around one another. He'd hoped that it would be self-suspending, at least in the medium term, and it looked like he would succeed there. It was fascinating, and triggered a series of follow-up ideas that he would have to try later if he ever found the time. Finally, he locked the gold in a liquid phase and increased its surface tension. That was by far the trickiest and most expensive magic to imprint on the now jiggly golden blob. It's hard to accurately imagine surface tension, and as soon as the gold started cooling, it would cost energy to keep it magically fluid at room temperature. But given its mighty, if currently untested magical capacity, Chris hoped it wouldn't be an insurmountable problem. All that was left to do now was let it cool, install it in the grotto, and give Petra the boning of her lifetime as they broke it in. He could already picture himself nibbling her shoulders, her tummy pressed to the extravagant golden surface as he rocked into her warm, slippery, vagina from behind. He suspected her orgasms would be something special to behold. When he eventually withdrew his awareness from the orb, he found his dragon body stiff and exhausted. Petra and Claire were warm against his flanks, cuddled close to conserve heat and keep him company in the freezing air. One of Petra's great wings blanketed their haunches like a tent. It was fully dark outside, and his questing tongue told him that the others had gone elsewhere a good while ago. Outside it was snowing again, crisp and cold and quiet in the alpine air. Winter was truly amongst them now. His dragonesses roused with his stirring. They shared a loving nuzzle, necks twining gently. "I must have become entranced. I was watching the gold very closely," he rumbled apologetically in the deep sibilance of his dragon voice. "It's good to know you're not immune, sire." Petra gave the side of his jaw an affectionate nip before licking it better. Her tail swished suggestively against his own. "Are you tired? You've been working on it for hours, Chris, just staring and pouring magic into that. Claire trailed off, then hissed a throaty chuckle. "What are we calling that marvelous thing anyway? It's yours now, you name it." Chris deferred, butting snouts with first red, then silver. His love for both swelled in his chest. A warm frisson tickled his thick neck scales, then translated all the way down his spine in a shiver to the bony tip of his tail. A deeper contentment stirred too, something down at the very core of him. Their kids would have the opportunity to grow up with this magic, with caring dragon mothers and a father that might have some idea what he was doing by the time they were his age. "I just wanted to do the best I could for you." Robert Faulkner looked up from the latest of many, many dossiers he'd been tasked to read that evening. Sometimes it felt like he was a comically undersized dog walker. There were so many leashes grasped in his hands, and he was being towed down the sidewalk by his runaway, barking charges. It was hard to think straight with so many political interests tugging him in every direction, all clamoring for his attention. You just couldn't keep everyone happy, and most everyone he dealt with seemed to be a selfish asshole in their heart of hearts. Point one of his many aides was knocking on the doorframe, Sarah, a document clutched triumphantly in her other hand. That one was going to go far, competent, ambitious, three-quarters immune to her own idealism. "We did it!" She lifted the document high, the United Nations logo emblazoned boldly on the front page. "They're bringing it up by 3 weeks. There was going to be some random security summit, but Germany, China, and Canada all agreed, and then everyone else who mattered started getting on board. We'll get fewer heads of state, but we should get most of the workhorses. Sarah, you're a genius." "I don't believe it, that's amazing." Robert was genuinely impressed. She'd wrangled the critical pre-revelation signing 3 whole weeks up the schedule. 3 whole weeks. "This is huge. It will force an end to the interminable pecking over minor details."
"Thank you."
"You're welcome." The young woman's enthusiasm tempered with a little embarrassment as the president got up and shook her hand. "What's your poison?" Robert asked, gesturing over to an ornate cherry side table where crystal tumblers and an array of decanters stood at the ready. "This is worth celebrating. I'll have the nastiest, oakiest whiskey you've got, sir."
"Neat, of course."
The president smiled broadly, his eyebrow raised slightly in appraisal. He chuckled to himself as he went over and poured a finger for each of them, the pungent scent of grain spirits leaking into the air.
"You really will go far, Sarah. Cheers, and well done."
"You must help me understand, Mr. Barrist." Sand trickled and scrunched around their ankles. Haley fidgeted and Chris could barely resist the impulse. It was hot to the touch. The sun beat unapologetically down from above, cooking the desert and the strange visitors from America.
"My people have little trust in the promises of foreigners anymore."
The white and blue-robed leader spoke in halting English. The pepper-haired elder was barely even sweating, though the posse of younger men who followed him everywhere, avidly listening, had the sense to congregate in the shadows of their hardy white vehicles.
"Understandable."
Chris nodded, respectful of the older man's wary nature. The compounding injustices heaped upon his people wouldn't allow for anything else. Just the cultural damage these people had endured would cripple them for decades to come, maybe longer. Yet here he was, and wondering if he wasn't just repeating the exploitative cycle. He looked to Haley beside him, judging that she was content to let him do the talking. She was nervous with the import of the moment, uncomfortable with the open leering by the elder's entourage. It would fall on his shoulders to make the offer.
"How can I help you understand our proposal? What are you getting out of this, big man?"
The elder liked to point out his size. He'd even offered Chris a mock wrestle when they'd first met. That reminded him fondly of Jethry.
"This land has one thing left of value. I do not see your tanks, American. Where is the mighty army to take it back in the name of freedom?"
A dark, wiry arm shot out from his loose garment. The gesture encompassed the bleached ochre dunes, the parched, rocky flats of a massive, ancient lakebed. The trail of a long-dead river snaked away in the distance, past the mining operation. The riverbed twisted back toward the sea, between short, spike-tipped hills whose slopes would be lucky to grow lichen. Chris sighed. He'd been hoping his nationality wasn't going to come up again. But he could understand why it did. He was treading on pre-salted earth.
"I am not affiliated with the government of the United States in this matter,"
Chris reiterated for what felt like at least the fifth time.
"This is a private, informal arrangement, a delicate arrangement. You're not exactly standing on firm political feet either, you know. But okay, what I get out of this is a quiet little part of the planet, a place where I can progress our experiments in relative peace.
I consider it a place to show the world what might be done with magic. Your people's situation, and your own blessing, will give me a moral high ground to stand on if anyone objects. And make no mistake, someone will object. If you don't like the sound of that, just say so. And you would just give it back to us, Sarlan?
The leader's eyes narrowed, his skin crinkling dryly at the corners of a face so lean as to be gaunt.
You would make the river flow and the desert bloom? You would support our claim of independence?
Bah, I have seen magic. Our people know of witches, of shape-changers and waterfinders. It is all tricks, small things, the healing of goats and the finding of lost cattle.
You haven't seen magic like this.
Chris promised softly, his patience was starting to erode under the baking sun. He looked out on the desolate landscape, almost resigning to give up and look for somewhere else to use as a proving ground for Haley's ideas. This place was perfect though, so barren. Even the people were broken and in need of help, if they could be persuaded to take it.
I want to help you. I will reshape this place. Your people will have electricity, clean water. You will be able to grow crops again, to fish in the lake. There will be tourists, roads, and eventually infrastructure. You can form your own government, educate your children, and if you decide I should leave, I will.
What will it take? How can I earn your trust?
Shut it down.
Through the rising heat haze, heavy machinery kicked up dust as piles and piles of whitish, phosphate-rich dirt were drawn up from the earth, ready for a long conveyor trip to port.
That fucking mine!
Chris growled, barely stopping himself from throwing his hands up in frustration.
You know that's not an option. The Moroccans will start another war over it. I never thought I'd see people killing each other over ancient bird shit.
Listen, forget the damn mine for a moment and think about your people. I can help you, help defend your claim to this land with a good conscience. But I will not initiate a conflict, however justified it might seem to you. If I was prepared to do that, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
What do you mean?
The elder asked. If I was prepared to conquer, to start a war with the Moroccans over this piece of desert, then there would be no need to ask your permission to use the land afterwards, would there?
I would just take it.
I suppose that is true. So what is your answer then? The man surveyed the desolate landscape for a long moment, frowning, as if seeking advice in the low dunes and the merciless heat of the near equatorial Sunday.
What choice do I have?
Chris sighed, all his frustration alloying into sour guilt. He couldn't imagine the hardships this old guy had battled with, his people disowned, beaten, rounded up in camps, and ignored by most of the world to this day. He shouldn't be strong-arming their representative into this weighty decision, but it truly would be to their benefit.
None, not really. I'm sorry. I know it must be hard, but put aside the past for a second, think of your future. Your children are growing up in tents and tin shacks, they aren't taught your culture, and few survive to adulthood. In a few generations you won't even exist as a people. More fighting is not going to solve that. At your age I would have disagreed, no? But it hurts, dragon.
The man swung a gnarled hand onto his chest, a clawing first in the sweat-stained cotton.
My heart is still full of a young man's anger. But you are right, my head knows that you are right. Help us. Yes, help us and you will have my blessing.
Haley clapped excitedly at the good news, then half hid behind him as she drew leering attention. Chris squeezed her hand and smiled, so she finally spoke up.
It would be our pleasure.
She started a little too eagerly, and reined herself back in.
It will still be months before we can think about breaking ground. But I've been looking over satellite images and I've drawn up some initial ideas for you to look at. I'll send them to your email. I need feedback, so now's the time to voice your concerns because once the engineering is finalized, we're dealing with some fine margins.
You've been remarkably busy. Rayla spoke with only a little acid in her tone as she preceded Chris down the arched hallway, not even glancing back over her shoulder.
I hear your work with Imianth is bearing fruit?
I'd like to think so. Chris agreed a little hesitantly, she didn't know the half of it. He felt like he'd been on shaky ground with Rayla lately. Never quite confident where he stood. Part of it was the guilt he felt for all the trouble that seemed to follow him around, and his own flouting of her advice. He didn't do it on purpose, most of the time at least.
There have been a few hiccups with the prototypes, and I'm sure you'd be disgusted by the inefficiencies we consider acceptable.
No doubt. Rayla scoffed to herself as she rounded into a less used corridor, headed toward the sanctuary of her office. She'd just finished a grueling morning in court, and the only time she'd had for him on short notice was during the precious piece of lunch.
Still, if you've created a workable device that will protect a human or unskilled being from a broad array of magical threats, it is a worthy achievement.
Wasteful, but worthy. I don't think I'll have too much trouble powering a few of them now, and we're still making improvements.
Yes, I heard about that too.
Rayla did look back this time, her expression not quite a full scowl.
I hope you covered your tracks. Trust a dragon to stub his toe on a whole mountain's worth of gold while the rest of us work for our living.
When was the last time you worked for a living? Chris chuckled to himself, perhaps foolishly, imagining the haughty elf throwing out hay bales on Jethry's farm in the bitter cold. It was quite an amusing image, and he didn't realize she'd rounded on him in fury until they'd almost crashed together.
Excuse me.
The tired elf boiled up at the loudish dragon, her slender earlobes quivering despite herself.
I didn't see you in court today, balancing the needs and wants of an ungrateful, largely ignorant bunch of cretins. By all means, Christopher, if you think I've got it easy, I know a spell that will temporarily displace our consciousnesses. You could spend a day in these damnable heels, bumbling through my appointments, while I could wear your body like a puppet and tap my way through your precious brood. I wonder if they'd even notice? I might enjoy fucking Lillian in the ass.
That's not funny.
Chris growled, fists clenching at his sides.
I didn't mean it like that. Shit, Rayla, I don't know what I meant.
Rayla breathed carefully through her nose, letting the cutting edge of her anger dull. She knew she'd lashed out, but it was such a thoughtless thing for him to say. A third of her workload was dealing with issues connected in some way to him. But it wasn't seemly for them to be screeching at each other in a hallway where anyone in the compound might stumble across them.
Accepted, and please disregard my vulgarity. Think before you speak. Now come on, let us go to my study.
They resumed their walk, both a little chagrined by the flare-up. Chris couldn't help noticing that Rayla could do with a big dose of her own advice, but knew better than to scratch at that scabby hypocrisy. There were others in the branching corridors. Scant moments later, a door opened on their right and a round little man came staggering out, clothes and hair smoking. He wore a thick, heavily singed blue coat, goggles, and he was waving his hands before him as a cloud of white, nasty smoke billowed out into the hall.
Gunter! Are you casting spells with phosphors again? I'll have your skin if I hear any more complaints. This is one of my favorite shortcuts. Humblest apologies, my lady.
The wizard wrung his hands at the misfortune of being caught by his patroness. He bowed low as she swept past.
A most excellent incendiary. I promise results soon.
Chris looked back at the alchemist, who appeared to be catching his breath beside the door before he ventured back in.
Phosphorus?
That was mad. He wanted to talk to the guy, but hurried to catch Rayla as she steamed ahead, undaunted.
I did cover our tracks with the gold, Rayla, I promise. What's wrong? You're not still mad about the dinner with your mom? Please don't refer to that horrible eel of a woman as my mom.
Rayla ground out between pursed lips.
She's already put in a sizable order for crystals, demanding I put her to the top of the queue. I dare not test if she's ready to call my bluff, but giving in too easily will just make her bolder about trampling on me. We don't know what she knows.
Chris tried to reason with optimism. She only got a glimpse, barely that.
It was enough.
Rayla seethed just thinking about the proverbial barrel her mother had her bent over now. With Chris' secret gripped in her haggish claws, Vash's torments would be long and insufferable.
She wouldn't have left so abruptly, nor been so polite about it to you. I suspect dear mother is older than she lets on. It's entirely possible she was actually around way back in the day.
No way?
Back in the conflict involving the old gods? I doubt we'll ever know, Chris.
It's possible, and she has dropped various hints over centuries. But she's also a consummate liar, and a braggart when it suits her goals. Whatever the truth, she's deduced something important about you.
Even if she doesn't have the whole of it, she feels she has enough advantage to press me.
Well, why don't you say no? Chris couldn't wrap his head around their dysfunctional relationship, and didn't particularly want to.
It seems to me that if you give in, she'll just keep asking for more.
Tell her I said no if that would make it better. In front of him, Rayla shook her head at his words, her perfectly straight silver hair flowing beautifully with the movement. Chris' eyes were naturally drawn towards the end of that moonlight river, and the elegant shape of elven hips. He caught himself and remembered the sting of her latest outburst as an antidote to his draconic lust.
It's not that simple, Christopher. You are right in a way, giving in to her demands will embolden her. If I refuse entirely, however, her pride will force her to escalate in return. I've seen her do it before. Mother is inclined to kick over the entire cage if she can't have her pick of the juiciest malocrats. So I will find my own points of leverage and accept whatever weak bargain I can wring out of her for now. It will help to ensure her silence, and then, slowly, she will be culpable in this little conspiracy. The last thing we need is you, personally, objecting to her.
It would undermine my authority in this negotiation, and invite her to turn her attention more directly on you.
Okay, let's avoid that. Chris agreed hastily, almost shuddering at the thought of Vash Narlaki's becoming any sort of fixture in his life. One irritable elf was quite enough.
You know, I figured out why she got so upset, right before the end.
Oh? Rayla glanced back at the dragon, a smile quirking her lips despite herself. She wondered where the lad was taking this.
The ruler of every territory may demand magical service or assistance of their subjects at their discretion or need. The terms of such service are the ruler's prerogative, though it is traditionally rewarded. I technically couldn't refuse.
Rayla sighed then, and stopped again to face her young dragon. It was a serious subject, one she'd been studiously avoiding since the first day he'd barged into her court. She glanced up and down the corridor, then took one of his huge hands on her own and cast a small sound-deadening field with a whispered phrase. None of this was the sort of discussion to have in a hallway, but she valued him too much to let him stew over her intentions a moment longer.
It is an old custom, Chris, put down in our laws a very long time ago. I think it was likely written with wartime in mind. I have used it in the past, though never lightly.
Rayla watched his striking blue eyes as she spoke carefully, measuring his reaction.
A wise leader would hesitate to enforce the privilege with an unwilling subject. It would drive them to seek shelter with another lord or lady, or court disloyalty in her own ranks.
I get it, Rayla.
Chris squeezed her hand gently in return. It was less shocking once I actually understood what your MO, what Vash was on about. It's not much different from a draft.
Good, I'm glad you understand. But let me finish, Christopher. Rayla nodded thankfully and committed to explaining more fully.
Beings are no better than humans, and at embracing societal changes, many of us are worse.
I know, you dusty old things get stuck in your ways after a few centuries.
Chris chuckled gamely.
Hush, you impudent youngster, this is serious. I have lived with slavery, even owned slaves for more of my life than I have not.
It might surprise you to know that I am actually somewhat of a radical liberal compared to many of my counterparts around the world. but the society I was born into is one of the most hierarchical and least equitable there is. Our men have almost no part in deciding the course our people walk. They are prized for loyalty and docility, and treated more like prized livestock than men. So my mother boxed that I don't use you damnably for my own ends. She doesn't really understand any other way, and doesn't want to because doing so would topple her from a throne built on thousands and thousands of years of oppression, stagnation, and hoarded knowledge. That's pretty grim. Chris agreed. Yes. I left long ago because I realized there was no future for me there. So when I say that I have been sorely tempted these past months to make you my plaything, take it seriously. I think I could have done it too, if I started right after you arrived. Chris watched Rayla frown slightly as she spoke almost indulgently about magically subduing him to her whims. Her delicately slanted eyes took on a faraway quality, as she relieved the momentous day of his presentation and the swearing of his oath. Mother wouldn't have even hesitated if you'd showed up on her doorstep. You would quite literally be following her around on a leash by now. I admit that many times in the past I have secured my own ends by unsavory means, torture, indoctrination both magical and mundane, slavery, psychomancy, the taking of hostages. But I have also learned that the strongest bonds of loyalty are those that are formed willingly, through mutual benefit and respect. I don't offer that to everyone, Chris. There is nowhere near enough time, and to be blunt, many people just are not worth the trouble. Rayla paused, cocked her head as if considering something and glanced down at their linked hands before she continued. When I realized what you truly are, I rejoiced that I had left you be. Yet part of me despaired that it meant I might have missed my chance to bind you to myself. But it was the right choice, Chris. You are better than me, stronger and far more compassionate. You are too valuable to be stunted by my petty machinations, and so I won't let you trip over anyone else's if I can help it. I at least can promise to never use you against your will. However, you should not assume others will be as scrupulous. If you can't have me, no one else can? Chris tried to make light of what she just admitted. Or something like that. Well, thanks. I do appreciate it. He mused, dropping her dainty hand to run his own nervously through his hair. After all she'd said, it seemed like the perfect time to raise the prickly issue he'd come to address. He wanted to be tactful and appreciative, but suspected he would fall spectacularly flat. I'll admit it's a little horrifying to consider the things you must have done down the centuries, but I try not to judge too harshly before wearing the shoes in question for a while. Rayla smiled, partially extending a long, dark leg from her red skirts. A pointed silver heel was revealed, the shoes strapped elegantly around her ankle. These would fit you poorly, dragon, trust me. Yes, I see that. But Rayla, all this raises a huge question. Geez, how do I put this? Which one of us is in charge? In charge? Why, I am, of course. Rayla scoffed, stepping back slightly with a more calculating eye. No, no, I know you're the ruling lady, I get that. You couldn't pay me enough to do your job. Chris reasoned. I'm talking about the big stuff. I'm somehow connected to these supposedly ancient entities, right? These incredible abilities are both blessing and burden, but I intend to use them, and keep using them. After the revelation, I want to try some pretty wacky stuff. I know you want me to lie low, but it just won't work, Rayla. I already got one vampire pregnant by accident, and this latest experiment is going to play havoc with the crystal market all over again. I keep doing all these remarkable things, not really on purpose, sooner or later it will be one too many. And don't get me started on my kids. Prodigal little whelps if you believe our good doctor. Yes, exactly. What I mean is that there will be consequences for concealing my nature, and the secret seems to become more and more of a farce every month. So when it's finally all out in the open, and I'm flying astronauts to Mercury, or magically walling off half of the oceans as marine reserves, are you still in charge then? Are you responsible somehow for reining me in? Would you, could you? Who negotiates with the old gods? Me? The Synod? You felt that damn thing when you came to rescue me. If you want that job too, it's yours in a heartbeat. Chris paused, but Rayla was too deep in thought just then to reply. He continued because suddenly it was all overwhelming again, and he never seemed to be able to fully unburden himself at home. He needed her advice and comfort again, like that evening in her tiny, book-cramped apartments. I'm not even against the idea of lending you my magic for your own work, or letting you have the final say-so on some of the stuff I'm planning. But Rayla, you're not perfect either. You've just admitted as much, and I felt your anger when you hit me with that freaky baton. I suspect I'm only now starting to scratch the surface in terms of getting to know you. You must have collected secrets upon secrets over thousands of years. How do I trust you, Rayla? I don't even trust myself with half of this crazy stuff. What if I screw it all up? Silence loomed close around them, artificially potent. Dragon and elf locked eyes, measuring, testing, weighing their past and pondering their future. You are so young. Rayla spoke without reproach. There might even have been a fond tone to her words. She hesitantly reached a finger toward his heart, racing mightily under stresses of being thousands of years old might still find crushing. She barely touched his cotton shirt, barely felt the heat of him when she came to her decision. Come on. Come with me, Christopher. She brushed past him, headed back the way they'd just come. What? You'll see. Rayla. Chris complained weakly, trotting a few steps to catch up with her long, perfect strides. You expect me to have answers to those weighty questions? She actually laughed over her shoulder at him, already giddy with the import of what she was about to do. Chris, no one can answer those questions, those insecurities. We all have them, and eventually we all learn to keep the worst of them to ourselves. Really? Chris asked as they came to a more populated junction. What about after a few thousand years?
Rayla chose a broad, well-lit passageway that shortly brought them to one of the ramp sections that linked to the ever smaller, ever more exclusive lower levels. She dropped the spell. That sort of magical field was taxing to maintain on the move. So she waited to reply until her ears only detected their own footsteps and crisp breathing. Not that acting as counselor to the dragon was secret, but she didn't want it getting around that he needed this sort of pep talk. The speculation surrounding him was bad enough already.
Especially after a few thousand years, Chris. At some point we all realize that on the inside, no one is much better or worse than anyone else. We make peace with who we are, our lot in life, and learn to accept the consequences of our decisions. Good or bad, no one can be responsible for what you decide to do other than yourself. Most humans don't realize how few truly meaningful decisions they have in their short lives. There's certainly not much value agonizing over such things, not in the long term. And no one likes to listen to a moaner, Chris, especially one who is otherwise so blessed in every aspect of their life.
I didn't mean to moan. Chris felt a little badgered by the accusation.
There's just a lot on my shoulders.
You didn't, not really.
But Chris, everyone has their own private burdens. Venting your inner woes is not exactly the basis for a polite conversation in most situations. I try not to scream at my subjects about how angry it makes me when I have to adjudicate them squabbling over who slept with whom, three llamas, or a sack of magical jumping beans. I heard about the guy with the beans. Word is he hasn't stopped blushing after what you said to him, and it's been almost 2 weeks.
Oh hush.
The point is, we try to keep flaws to ourselves, because that is the adult thing to do, Chris.
Rayla expounded, unfazed by his little barb. She needed some of that in her life, someone to make playful fun at her.
I have a temper, it is true. I am also glad that you come to me for such counsel, we are friends after all, and I am somewhat qualified. So, you have power, and some tough decisions will come with that. I can only offer advice, because you are right, I cannot make those decisions for you. Instead, I offer my advice. And the occasional timely rescue.
Chris acknowledged his recent episode of magical distress.
Thanks for that. Oh, I still intend to milk you for all you are worth, dragon. Doubt it not.
They were still headed downward, the possibilities for their destination shrinking with every artfully vegetated switchback ramp. Before long they were at the bottom, and Chris' unease spiked with sudden concern. The first checkpoint on the lowest level waved them through, the attentive guards glancing speculatively at one another. Their employer came down here seldom, and never with guests.
Rayla, you're not going to duel me into the ground or anything crazy, are you? Chris worried as they approached the mildly familiar stained copper doors where Annabelle and Imianth had been granted permission to practice unrestrained magic with Bartholomew.
If I've offended you, I dash, ha.
The elf chuckled darkly to herself.
Oh no, Christopher, it's much worse than that.
That carefree manner was strictly out of character. Chris' hands were growing clammy as they passed straight by Timothy's empty office, and his unease only grew when they passed by the disused dueling chamber as well.
You asked how you could trust me?
Rayla continued down the long corridor.
I must admit it is an excellent question. Were I in your position, I would not continue our relationship on such unequal terms.
They went under a pronounced portal, an intricate archway mounted there for no obvious reason other than to signify a threshold of some sort. Chris shivered as he ducked his head slightly, new energies stirring softly around them. The archway hadn't been a defense, it was containing something. Rayla abruptly rounded a 90-degree corner. The off-white subterranean passageway continued ahead, this one completely void of any embellishment, door, or decoration at all. About 20 meters away, a guard looked up in disbelief. He was an older man, but Chris noted instantly that he was a fighter, wiry with lean, rope of muscle under his printed rock band t-shirt. Rayla wasn't a problem, but the man registered Chris' presence and instantly fumbled for something on his suspiciously solid-looking desk. The guard suddenly sprang back, retreating down the corridor away from them. Light blazed into existence ahead, silhouetting and yet obscuring the retreating guard. The magical orbs mounted on the ceiling suddenly dazzled with a multitude of spectra. Chris halted where he was as hidden recesses along the passageway flowered silently open, tracking the intrusion. Chris could sense staggeringly powerful magics awaking in some of the pockets, and bare hints of subtler, more insidious workings in others. Crystalline nozzles peeked out at them on weirdly articulated metal stalks, observing keenly with artificial eyes, no doubt ready to blast him to dust. Chris heard the muffled hum and clank of huge cogworks behind the stone to his left and right, and had the disturbing premonition that the walls could crush together abruptly by some unseen signal. Rayla was still walking, but now the man was standing his ground up ahead, poised low and ready, a vicious long knife in each scarred hand. He bore fully 12 inches of glinting steel in each, and he looked proficient in their use.
It is I.
Rayla advanced, arms open to either side, completely confident in the rightness of her presence.
Please, Lark, administer the tests.
Chris held himself and his magic very still, hanging back by several more paces as Rayla finally stopped before the abandoned checkpoint. The security station looked to have been hewn intact from a very thick trunk, it took up more than half of the hallway. As Chris wondered at Rayla's odd words, his imagination ran wild on possibilities. If anything else had been spoken, or by anyone else.
And him?
Lark wasn't yet convinced, gesticulating toward Chris with the tip of a blade.
Your orders were quite specific, my orders are my own, Lark.
Rayla announced implacably, imperious and yet phrased like a lecture to both of them.
Mine to keep, and mine to break. To have it any other way would be madness.
Look aside now, Christopher.
I might entrust what is behind this door to your keeping, but not the keys.
Chris did as he was asked, looking back down the corridor longingly. He hadn't planned on delving into Rayla's secrets this afternoon. He'd sought clarity and resolve, not more to cloud his overtaxed judgment. This felt like a trap. Beyond just being caught in her web, this could be the fateful entombment in a cocoon of her finest silk. Spiders always seemed to do that right before they supped on the liquefied innards. He could still flee. But she'd mentioned their friendship, and her strangely upbeat demeanor now tantalized his curiosity. What lay at the heart of Lady Rayla Nalaki's vaunted nexus? A heavy clang spoke of a huge locking mechanism unsealing nearby.
"Sorry, my lady, I thought perhaps an illusion."
Lark trailed off under the drow's regard, but the relief was in his gruff voice.
"Well, never mind, it is you, and the young dragon is your own business."
"So he is, though I applaud your wariness. Timothy chose well for this duty." Some of Rayla's haughtiness had returned, but when she refocused toward Chris, bejeweled fingers outstretched, she flashed him a perfectly white grin. Her dark lips pursed wider in private amusement as he hesitated.
"Take my hand, Christopher, and do not let go for anything until we stand outside once again. I know your deepest secret, and so, if we are truly friends, it is only fair that you know mine."
Chris followed in a daze. What choice was there? His hand monstrously dwarfed hers, and yet he clutched her long fingers like it was Susan dropping him off for his first day at school. Ahead, the corridor ended in opaque yellow light. Rayla led them straight toward it as she began her explanation.
"After my first true taste of battle, I knew I would someday die. At the time, I feared that it would come to me sooner rather than later. Mother spent our lives too easily back then, not just clan sisters, but her own true daughters as well. She even sent out troops of our menfolk, under supervision, to harass our lighter-skinned cousins. We acquitted ourselves well, though the true cost in life and lost knowledge would not be felt for centuries. Our folk had just come through a time of upheaval, consolidating several outlying settlements into the ancestral keep. It was somewhat crowded down there, and I suspect Mother used the opportunity to weed out competition, for that was surely the result."
"Why were you fighting?" Chris asked, closing his eyes and wincing as the end of the long corridor loomed. It radiated heat like a well-stoked fire. The luminosity was bright red through his eyelids.
"For pride, greed, defaulted debts, and any number of long irrelevant reasons."
Rayla sighed at the interruption, changing course slightly to the right and tugging him along.
"That is the way of war, Chris. It picks you up and drags you across the coals no matter the reason it started. But hush now, let me tell my story. And open your eyes, silly boy. We are safely inside the disintegration field now, so don't let go."
Chris' eyes flew open, and he almost did let go. He glared down at her, questioning every choice that had led to him following this devious elf into a disintegration field, whatever that was exactly. Then his eyes caught up to his surroundings, and he swiveled around to gawk at the marvelous latticework of silver supporting and surrounding them. Behind, and retreating around the curve of the wall with every forward step, the corridor leading back to the compound shimmered and wavered. It was still visible, but seemed a world away already.
"Battle did not suit me at first. I was more interested in books and tablets than swordplay and tactics. But Mother is the matriarch, and her direct orders are not lightly disobeyed. So I went to war, side by side with my sisters and our various allies. I disliked the fighting and killing, but was astonished to find that I had somewhat of a talent for it. My avid reading had taught me much of old and potent magics, and once my temper was roused in the heat and stink and screams of the melee, I am told I was a terror."
Chris heard her words, but his focus kept drawing toward the disorienting pattern of the walls. Triangles, squares, and perfect hexagons. They weren't right somehow. Magic pulsed slowly in from every angle, fraying at his focus, yet retreating when he reached out. The way ahead looked identical to the way back, curving out of sight, narrowing and domed into utter darkness above. It was as if she led him into a never-ending spiral shell, long abandoned by some enormous hermit crab.
"Blood magics are a disgracefully powerful school if the enemy is foolish enough to close, and the alliance of houses our cousins brought to the war were eager for bloodshed. Mother was right in a way, it did toughen me. But that was when I truly started my search. I was young, reckless, and ambitious, though I hid that as best I could from my surviving family. I did not want to die gloriously on the field, nor to a poisoned dagger from behind. So, in my brief sojourns, I redoubled my research. It was quite a joke amongst the clan, the fearsome, bookish young daughter hiding away in the deepest stacks of her mother's library. I told my mother I was researching better ways to kill, and it wasn't even a lie. But what I truly searched for was a way to live, to survive."
She must have led him three or more times around the spiral. Chris wasn't sure now. The walls were probably thin, though they looked solid enough. He dared not even brush his shoulder against one. Perfect geometric tiles of stone, crystal, and gem trapped into place by the painstaking labor of 1,000 goblins. That's how he would do it anyway. But what about the silver cage? He hadn't seen a break or join of any sort, but they must exist. Did the structure continue below their feet, in mirror of the narrowing chasm above? He was sure it must, for symmetry's sake alone. With a start, Chris realized that the rhythm of magic he felt was in tune with the faint pulse in the elf's fingers he still gripped. He shuddered at the thought, damping down dragon instinct that growled at him to flee.
"Not much further now, dragon."
Rayla spoke with chilling timing.
"I did survive that war, to my own surprise. It ended in betrayal, stalemate, and atrocity. Our clan was ruined, more than decimated, though it was always framed as a Pyrrhic victory. Both sides still claimed to have won, even a few thousand years later when only fools should care. I had already found hints that my search might bear fruit, so I continued my efforts and began to travel too.
A few decades later, Mother offered me the dubious honor of a high position in her court once filled by my dead older sister. I refused, and suddenly our animosity was given some light to grow in. Things became uneasy between us, so I removed myself from high society and began preparing my departure. I formally cut ties with the clan a century later, stealing away with knowledge the old bitch had long forgotten, or never bothered to learn. It was the internal angles, Chris thought. They looked okay dead on. But in the corners of his vision, they were off, somehow less or more than they should be, as if the shapes to either side were sapping them away. The pattern seemed to bulge out at him or shrink suddenly. It happened seemingly at random, but never when he gave it his focus. It drew the eye and disquieted the mind. Everything was so similar, an endless repetition of geometry folding into itself and also back out. So I journeyed for many, many years. I lived amongst humans for a while, and I dabbled here and there with forces better left alone. I felt another war stirring on the wind, and so I began my great work. Of course it was not nearly so large back then, and much easier to hide. Rayla, what is it? What is this crazy place? She laughed again, suddenly girlish, with a secret kept too long to herself. Her beautiful gray eyes seemed bright in the dim, curving passage. She kept his hand but began walking backwards so that they were face to face. One of her expressive dark ears flicked, and she licked her lips in anticipation. It is I. The ancient elf smirked. Really, Chris, you might have figured some of it out by now. The endless curve abruptly sharpened, and Rayla coaxed him through a huge hexagonal portal to the left. Chris would have sworn it wasn't there from just meters away. They were in a very strange room of sorts, the pattern ever present in every facet. Ever perfect and wrong in equal measure. The chamber was an even larger hexagon, with two other openings leading away into unnatural dimness, one upward, one downward. But Chris barely gave them a glance, his eyes were locked on the object at the center of the room, metallic, and somehow fibrous. Or perhaps a crystalline thing. It spun there, as alien as a neutron star. A true nexus, holding his mind's eye like a fly on fresh glue paper. Lazily suspended between great tetrahedra jetting seamlessly from floor and ceiling, the mysterious object slowly spun. It never truly touched the tip that he could see, but the energy it gave off was real enough, washing over his senses like a lighthouse beacon in the dark. Flash, flash, flash. The room, and Chris' entire awareness seemed to tunnel down toward it, yet registered no lasting detail. A forever folding, forever growing aberration of repeated geometry. It pulsed a gentle, silver-toned light in exact offbeat to the magic. So mesmerizing was it, that Chris' perspective jaunted back and forth. One blink and it rotated as he watched. The next it was stationary, while he and the entire structure spun around and around it in perpetual orbit. Beautiful. Chris heard himself murmur. Thank you. Rayla squeezed his hand. Intentionally or not, the stimulus provided a breaking in the pattern's hold. Chris refocused, blinking blearily after images from his eyes. It could have been days for all he knew. In the moment he glanced to ask for an explanation, Chris registered the figures encased behind the tessellated wall at their backs. Words died on his tongue, and he spun to see that symmetry was indeed given holy precedence in this place. Annabelle's vivid retelling, and Amy's dark mutterings started to make a sixth sense. 4, 3, and crowded 6, no, 5. Naked, perfect copies of Rayla embedded in the bizarre structure. Held in some unknown medium behind the repeating shapes, awaiting, what? 24 modest, yet sumptuous dark tits, unstirred by the rise and fall of breath. 12 pairs of gray eyes, all staring blankly from behind a mathematically perfect cage. All staring at the churning heart of the pattern. The 13th pair looked unerringly at him, and her ancient heart was in those pretty eyes. Birds seldom fly north into the teeth of winter, but these two were not your average birds. Their flock was only two, and their imperative was not one of migration. They barely stopped to rest, uncaring of rain, snow, or sunshine. If they did, it was not to peck and scratch at grain or toss breadcrumbs. Nor did the red-eyed pair gorge themselves on the fleeting bounties of the shoreline, or trill to each other in fervent mating affirmation. The doves dropped unsuspected upon isolated farmers, fishermen, and one very unlucky woman who had done nothing except decide to wash her clothes by a stream in anticipation of a job interview. They left inexplicable corpses in their trail. A thin string of dead so dissociated by road, mountain, and border that no one ever did connect the dots. Eventually they no longer flew together, for each had their own destination. Were they not entirely possessed, the mated doves would not have willingly separated. But their brief, instinctual reluctance was overpowered by the domination set upon them thousands of miles ago. One veered slightly west, headed for a quiet, unassuming farmyard on an alpine prairie. The other continued on, north and east. It flew over great tracts of cropland, forests, and bustling cities. Its quarry was eventually located crouched at the bottom of the steep, foreboding gully, claimed and tainted long ago. The long-limbed, unshorn creature barely glanced up as the dove alighted in the tines of its one unbroken antler, too intent on gulping down marrow from the grizzled bone it had just laid open between two gory rocks. And what do you want? The shaggy fellow eventually rumbled in a voice thick and cracked with disuse. He leered up at the bird through lank, twig-tangled hair that might have once been brown. Its eyes were sickly yellow, too large, and more goats than man's. It tossed one half of its calciferous meal down toward the little gurgling stream. The undamaged side of his face twitching at the pleasant, hollow clatter it stirred before it came to rest, just one amongst thousands and thousands. The dove fluttered down beside the creature on the great, altar-like slab of soiled stone, dangerously close to gore-flecked, strangle-fingered hands. The bird cocked its head side to side, beady red eyes seeming brighter in the thin light at the bottom of this jagged knife slashed deep in the wooded hills. It began pecking strangely in the filth, then scratching with its little feet. After pausing to inspect its work, the demon dove gave up and hopped toward the nearest midden of bleached bones. The man-thing growled, but the bird only dumped fizzing excrement by way of reply. That seemed to settle the matter of desecration for now. The feathered messenger began a lengthy, flapping process of selecting manageable bone fragments off the heap, then arduously dragging and arranging them on the stone. It was nearly crushed in a rattly avalanche, but the loosened pile yielded appropriately sized material far more easily after that. It took a long time, for the task was unsuited to a small bird, and some of the bones were very large, deer, bear, and perhaps something in between.
My triumph, triumph, yes.
The forest nightmare ponderously sounded out each roughly formed word when it was done.
My triumph is almost at hand.
Soon.
Follow the bird.
Go quiet.
And why should I help you, Radek?
Azanoth finally looked up to address the winged minion, suspicion in his hunched posture. The eared dove could indignantly, puffing its chest feathers and bobbing its little head. It clearly cared nothing that Azanoth could wring its neck in an instant as it paced angrily before its squatting audience. Eventually it hopped onto the bone words and began furiously kicking or buffeting them about with its wings until they hinted roughly at just two
godling bones.
The end. This podcast is part of the Erotica Podcast Network. We offer a free Erotica podcast and a premium patron taboo podcast which contains more intense sexual themes. You can subscribe to the premium podcast for $2 per month or support the Erotica podcast on Patreon to support us and allow members to request future stories and themes. Links are in the description. Thank you for listening.